Greetings, Earth Explorers. Welcome to X Squared Radio, where the past meets the future. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. In here, the results are always positive. We explore the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. Whether you are driving across the desert today or listening on the web while you're working on your favorite project, you are about to learn more about who we are, why we are here, and what we may become than you thought possible. We might go a little past your imagination, but have no fear. You will be safely traveling with us. Keep your arms inside the vehicle, recline your chair, and look out the window as we launch X Squared Radio. The solar wind today is a medium 443.9 kilometers per second. There was a strong solar wind yesterday, but an aurora did not occur. However, tomorrow, although there are no sunspots, there will be a moderate solar wind and a good chance for an aurora. The grand opening of the Da Vinci Code is better than critics expected. They seem to have done their best to thwart it, but people's thirst for knowledge about pieces that appear to be missing from the Bible is greater than their spin machines. Fiction or not, Dan Brown has done a good job of sparking interest in the ancient subject of Freemasonry. And amateur astronomers have again made world news. Peter McCullough and his team have discovered a Jupiter-sized planet they call X-Zero. It is 600 light-years from Earth in the constellation Corona Borealis. Although they built their own binocular telescope, you should be able to find it with a good telescope. I told you that most of the best discoveries are made by ordinary people like you and me, with extraordinary dreams. Next week on X Squared Radio, our guest is the fantastic radio host and now author of the new book, Gods in the Garden, Kevin Smith. Millions of you are used to him doing the interviewing. Well, my good friend and mentor is coming on X Squared Radio to have a great time and tell us about this extremely timely new book. Expect this to go well past the traditional ideas about the development of man as seen in the Bible. You will not want to miss this program. Well, we have been doing some really neat changes to the website at x2-radio.com. You should be able to more easily access the archives, shop for very cool stuff for your space, and leave us notes. And remember, we answer every single email, so feel free to write us anytime. And as always, you can listen for free. If you want to stay current on our programs, guests, books, CDs, DVDs, and other outstanding stuff for your space, you can make X Squared Radio your favorite place on the web at x2-radio.com. We also want to welcome our AM affiliates, and we want to welcome Global Star Radio Network. Joining us tonight on a simulcast. Your requests that this program be placed onto satellite upfeeds, XM or Sirius, have been heard. They are having their effect, and we appreciate it. Tonight on X Squared Radio, our guest is Sandy Andrew. Named Henry Alexander Andrew, but known as Sandy, he grew up in a small town in Scotland, my home country, which by no means is typical. Nor is completing an apprenticeship in painting and decorating in England. In fact, there is almost nothing typical about Sandy Andrew, a dynamic, hopeful part-time writer with big goals and an even bigger message. Sandy informs the reader that this kind of learning guided by the universal laws and universal energy that will lead us to our most fulfilled and spiritually satisfied state. His theories are described with both the certainty of his business knowledge and the heart of his diverse life experiences. He is the author of the Universal Living series, and his new book is entitled Your Never-Ending Life. Please welcome with me Sandy Andrew. Good evening. How are you?
Good evening. Thank you very much.
Welcome from the western frontier of Kansas. Let's see, I always like to make sure people know your website so they can check it out while they're listening. It's universallearningseries.com and then / your ever-ending press. or your ever ending and then /press.htm. Is there an easier website that they can access you at?
Well, Dr. Agnew, if they go to universallearningseries.com, they'll arrive at the main page. It'll see a button tab they can click on that will take them to book one of the Universal Series Learning Series, which is Your Never-Ending Life. So just go to universallearningseries.com, and it's quite straightforward from there.
Perfect. Well, we'll give that out many more times during the night. Also, we're going to start out something a little bit different than we normally do. We're going to make sure that you know the toll-free number right at the top of the show. It is 877-876-5227. You can call that toll-free from anywhere, and we will field your questions. So don't be shy. Whatever we happen to cover tonight that spawns you to ask a question, we don't screen them. Just come in. We just ask you to not be profane or argue with us too much. Because we might move on, but we don't screen them. We really want your honest thoughts. Now, I read your book. I was sent Your Never-Ending Life. It's book one of the Universal Learning Series. I found it fascinating. It's a very easy read. For one thing, there's no math formulas in it, so I immediately liked it right off. I must admit, I am a strong student of the two questions you describe in your book. The first is, who are you? And the second one is, why are you here on planet Earth? My goodness, if I had a dollar for every time someone has asked that question and gotten a blank look, I think I'd be a rich man by now. That is a very, very important set of questions. And I guess we all have the same questions that come up when we reach the end of the trails we've chosen in life, or when we stop having so much loud fun, you know, while we're charging forward and all full of ourselves, we don't think so much of those things. But when things get quiet or at the end of a job or we've been laid off or something, then we ask these questions again.
Yeah.
And in your book, you start out talking about the nature of the universe. So why don't you tell us what that is and how you think we humans fit into it?
Well, many people refer to the universe as perhaps the Milky Way galaxy and some other galaxies beyond that. I generally feel that the universe is A to Z of everything. And the living dimensions that we incarnate to learn and experience, such as the Milky Way galaxy and the over 125 billion estimated galaxies within our known living dimension are part of the universe, but are not the universe within itself. So I view the universe as perhaps heaven, the afterworld, your living dimensions, Earth, everything from A to Z, right across the board.
Seems like an awful lot of space out there.
It is, isn't it?
In looking at ancient history, which I am somewhat of an amateur student of, my co-author E.J. Clarke is much more a student of it than I am. We seem to run across civilization after civilization where at least the leaders, the government leaders, want us to believe that we are alone in the universe, that somehow we are certainly created beings, but we're the only created beings in the universe. And I don't think you believe that at all, do you?
No, not at all. Not at all. I believe the spirit can incarnate into any life form on any world throughout the living dimensions to experience and learn. And it's funny how you use that word organization. You know, those who stand to lose tend to create an impression that believe this way or else. And there's just so much out there that it's beyond our comprehension to actually sit down and think it's either this way or nothing, and anything outside of that thought train will lead you to oblivion is simply not true.
Oh, we sure see that recorded over and over in various writings and laws, and even in our country, you know, we have this recent groundswell of legal storms to separate church and state, but the appearance of it, at least the perception of it, to us is that it's the elimination of church, not so much the separation of church and state.
Yeah.
So do you think that we are eternal beings?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And one of the strong arguments I have for that is that, let's run a hypothetical situation here. Let's say there's five of us sitting in a room, and I say, okay, Islam's the best religion of the world. We'll practically almost have a fist fight on the spot with various people throughout America, for example. Or if I say Christianity is forever and Buddhism is a load of rubbish, you know, a real serious heated argument would probably break out. Now, when I turn around and I say to people, what about past lives and reincarnation? You watch the subdued response you get from people. They kind of look at you. They're a little bit scared. There's some people a little bit scared to kind of speak their mind and stand up on the podium and state their beliefs. But I think within each human being, we're born with a sense of universal truth. Although I firmly believe that we're shut off to this knowledge while we're incarnated and living our life, because if you know all the answers while you're living, Dr. Agnew, there's absolutely no point to the lifetime, because you won't experience the lesson in its true and true format.
So life is a learning experience.
Oh yeah, I mean that brings us back to one of your opening statements when you said when we kind of get laid off or things are quiet and at the end of a particular period in our life where we've been going 110 miles an hour and all of a sudden things don't go our way and we're sitting in a chair, looking out the window, feeling sorry for ourselves, and then we ask the question, why are we here? And I think one thing that every human being has in common, practically every single one of us, is that we all learn. We all seem to learn by our experiences. And we all have different experiences in life.
And some of those lessons are pretty painful, aren't they?
Yeah, but I don't think you necessarily have to have a life of pure emotional destruction, although you can choose to incarnate and experience that, such as those of us who went through the hell of World War II. You know, the last 50 years, we really haven't had a world war, and if you probably ask most of the people that come on the show or you ask them questions that they call in, have they had some pretty traumatic experiences, and they'll say, yeah, and they say, did you serve in any wars? I say, no. So you can still experience some pretty traumatic lessons within your lifetime without really having to any armed conflict or any real physical. You know, emotions really are what we are as human beings run on, and that's where we tend to feel most of the pain, but also learning at the same time. But I also wish to stress, what I'm saying is I don't think you have to actually experience real discomfort in order to learn. And a lot of our experiences, in fact most of them, we cause by our own actions during our lifetime that tend to be with or without our preordained experiences, meaning some events are going to happen in our life.
Right.
And some are not. I know we're kind of digressing here, but that's the theory of universal learning. You start talking and you get so excited you go down the road yourself.
Well, you know, that being said, one of the questions that comes up from time to time, people want to know, you know, if we are eternal beings, then are we made of energy?
Yeah. Well, the whole world, the whole planet is made of energy. I mean, every single thing on it.
Yeah.
I write in my book as a very basic example that a slab of rock is energy, like a piece of granite. And you can say, well, that's impossible. How can granite be energy? Well, if you pour a waterfall over for 3,000 or 4,000 years, and let's come back and let's have a look at some of the erosion that's taking place, and you may say, well, that's too long.
Well, not only that, we can take the atoms of that rock or the minerals of it, and we can super collide them together and turn all of it into pure energy. But, you know, you're talking to a chemist here, and I understand that energy is conserved, that one side of the equation is balanced with the other side of the equation, and whether we have reactants or products, all energy has to be accounted for. But when it comes to human spirits, it doesn't seem as though we change into anything else. I know we may incarnate physically, but we see to maintain our personality. In other words, the experiences that we gain all go into the same spirit account or bank account. So we are, the energy with which we are made is a little bit more unique, don't you think?
Yes, Doctor. I use energy as a general term. I don't really get into the actual chemistry levels of it. I did some research on it prior to writing book one. I didn't really want to get into that because I just used energy as a general term. You know, right as you said, because they have relationships at the, you know, the subatomic level. Now, your comment there about the spirit having like a bank account, the universal law of karma, which is one of the 12 that I list in book one, really states you only get out what you put in. And as you sow, so shall you reap. Now, as you go on in your universal learning experience and incarnate into various life forms, or let's say you have 10 in a row as a human being, some of the traits, such as, let's say you have problems controlling your temper and you're a very passionate, emotional person. You may not be a bad person, but you have trouble controlling your emotions. You will find that that will be a trait, an incarnation trait, which you will carry forth into future lifetimes with you until you learn to get that part of emotional control under control. So a lot of the experiences that we have in life are really to test us and for us to learn all these different sensations you can experience as a human being.
What if we live a life, you know, none of us are perfect, and and we make choices that build up a karmic debt, and we don't get it repaid in this lifetime. We don't make things right. We've been bad to folks our whole life, or we've been a tyrant or a dictator or a murderer. How is that debt repaid then?
That spirit will incarnate into a life form, whether here or somewhere else, and will have the opportunity to put that right.
Ah, so if we've made a mistake with our life, you think that we are somehow resent, or we're able to make another chance to live another mortal life to try and do it right the next time?
Absolutely. There is no time in the spiritual dimensions, which is our true home, and it can take an eternity's worth of earth time to get something right. Now, one of the questions that people ask me, Dr. Agnew, is what about how does a human being or spirit such as Adolf Hitler repay all the karmic debt that he owes for the absolute carnage that he caused on earth and during his lifetime? You know, and that's a really, really good question, but the basic answer is the same. That spirit will be sent back to various life forms to repay to the universe the damage that he caused. And all karmic debts will be repaid. And you know, no matter who you are or what you are in this lifetime, the old saying, what goes around comes around, is really most true.
Yeah, usually we like to see what comes around happen in this life, though. If somebody's been a real stinker, at least at work or at school or something, we kind of hope they get theirs and we live to see it.
Yeah, and I guess that's natural. But, I mean, don't get me wrong. I don't think you should always turn the other cheek and just let somebody run amok all over you, but just because the universal laws will take care of them. You really have to stand your own ground on Earth and defend yourself at all times.
Yeah,
I'm a firm believer in that.
We Scots are famous for that. We not much.
Yeah. I don't really believe in turning the other cheek. As long as you harm no other, you'll always have a good. You always feel fulfilled in life if you harm no other and you really try your best. You know, you can't win them all, and nobody does. And I think if you achieve fulfillment in your life, you'll leave this world a happy person.
Well, you talk in your book, and you just used a really good example of Adolf Hitler, that if we get it wrong in this life, we will not be thrown into a pit of flames in the afterworld.
Yeah.
So how do we, if there isn't anybody big enough to take us down, how do we realize that we have lived our lifetime in error?
Meaning, hypothetically, let's say I was Hitler, and how was I to know that I was doing wrong?
Well, when you left this world, if there's no, you know, place to go for punishment, when you leave this world, how do you know that you did not get that portion right?
Oh, okay. No, your guides will get you. They'll tell you.
Oh, all right.
Yeah. They'll be waiting for you on the side. You know, that I don't really... But, you know, who needs hell and who needs Satan when you've got all the characters of Earth running around right now? So I don't really believe in that at all. But you know, I don't want to stoke any fear into any of the readers or the listeners right now. But the only thing you just have to be concerned with in the theory, the spiritual theory of universal learning, is just what goes around comes around, and that's up to you. If you want to put a bunch of evil and bad ways into your life and inflict and this on others, then that's equivalent treatment is going to come right back to you
in this
lifetime or another, and or you may have to redeem yourself. One way or another, you're going to have to clear up what you've done. And, you know, just because, you know, my mother actually asked me a good question last year. She said, "Son, what happens if someone killed me? Is that because I killed someone else in a previous lifetime?" I says, "No." I don't think you could kill anybody. I said, "You might have nearly killed me with your slipper a few times when I was younger." But I don't think you could kill anybody. And to link this, what I'm about to say, another person emailed me and asked me this similar question. We live in a living dimension full of a living, breathing planet full of billions of people. And if you drew a matrix of all the decision-making that we all take every single day, and you pattern that into, like, some computer-generated programs and see the various outcomes, I mean, it's absolutely astronomical. So there's all sorts of things that can happen during a person's lifetime that you may think, "Wow, did I do something to deserve this?" But, you know, really deep within yourself, we all know if we deserve something or not.
Right.
I had an experience once with a relationship with a young girl. Well, she was my age when I was younger. And something happened about 6 months after we started this relationship. And in a way, Dr. Agnew, I deserved what happened to me. And we can sit and blame everything under the sun, but when you sit down and you reflect upon it, and you'll know within yourself whether something that happened in your life is perhaps okay. All right, well, I kind of caused that myself. Now it's time just to learn from it and then move on.
Well, I kind of like that. I like the idea that somehow we affect the universe by our actions or even our thoughts. Because
the thoughts, you know, your energy just vibrates.
Sure.
Every single thought you have vibrates across the universe. When you want to be, let's say you're young, we got a viewer here who wants to be a rock and roll star, and they're whatever, 13, 14, and they just love to sing, and they want that, and they keep thinking. They're putting that thought and that energy out there, right? And the guides pick up on this, and they say, "Okay, let's see what we can do." And then, like, a year later, you'll find that certain opportunities will present themselves to that person.
And then
it's up to them then to take
the
chance.
They have to have the courage to seize upon the opportunity and walk through the door. You talk in your book about the law of action and effect. So describe that real briefly, and then I got some questions I want to ask you about it.
Well, we just kind of talked about that a little bit in our prior conversation, such as every action we do has an effect on us, such as the one about me and that relationship with that girl that I had, that I caused the effect that happened 6 months later. There really isn't practically anything you can do in your lifetime that's going to have an effect. So every decision you take and every actual physical action, when you pick up the phone, you call somebody, or you initiate something, will always have an effect for you. Hopefully it'll be good for you, and sometimes it won't be, depending on what you're trying to do. So universal law of action and effect is pretty much common sense. It's just for every action you have, you will have an effect on your lifetime.
And likewise, inaction has its effect too. Just doing nothing also has its effect.
Well, you know what happens when you do nothing? Nothing.
Probably.
Nothing, absolutely nothing.
Evil men get elected when you do nothing. That's what happens. Now,
yeah.
One of the most interesting parts about this first book in your Universal Learning series is the incarnation characteristics. I found this most fascinating. We know we exist here and now on Earth. At least we think we're locked into this one third dimension in which we exist. Most of us, at some time or another, we think about what happens after this life. You say that when we pass from the Earth, the inherited traits of the species we are will remain here in the living dimension. The spirit will take back to the heavenly dimension all the emotional and life experiences associated with universal learning from the lifetime. So my first question about this is, what incarnations of lives are we humans capable of experiencing?
What incarnation of?
Yeah, in other words, can we, have we always been human, or have we been something else at some time in our existence?
I believe we can be any life form.
And you think
such as a lion, a whale, whatever. Because all the life forms have an energy spirit to them.
Mm-hmm.
They're not just robots. They're not just figments of our imagination. I mean, if you ever seen I lived in South Africa for 6 years. If you ever seen a lion in the wild in Africa, you'll know it's a living, breathing creature. And now, the incarnation characteristics, let's say I'm talking to you on the phone here and we're talking English, okay? And I'm looking here at the computer screen, and I've got my hand on the keyboard. If I chose to incarnate again into another lifetime, I have to relearn all these physical traits.
Right.
But the emotional energy that's associated with the experiences that I have gone through in this lifetime are retained in my higher mind, which is your spirit, your higher mind, your soul are the same thing, I call it as.
Okay.
And you retain the energy and the emotional energy of them experiences, that's what you take with you when you pass into the other dimension, when your life form physically ceases to exist here.
Well, I know some pagan sources, I hesitate to call them religions, maybe they're traditions, they speak of people having a familiar, which is a peculiar link with a type of animal.
Right.
Do you think that, obviously you think we've had incarnations as animals rather than humans, so maybe this is the reason why a bird or a horse or a dog or a fish has sort of a familiarity with a human?
Yeah, you have a fondness for it. You know, you kind of look at pictures of an animal, and you kind of stare at it, and you're just not quite sure what's going on. But you don't feel upset; you're just kind of staring at it. Absolutely, and that's a different type of experiencing sensation of learning. I mean, could you imagine possibly being a lion running around in the plains of Africa? Isn't it kind of mind-boggling to think? And then also, we can't ask the question to a lion because he doesn't speak English, but for a lion to be as a human being, it's quite an exciting concept.
Yeah,
these life forms, they all have energy to them. They all have a living conscience within them, huh?
They do? Lions have different personalities?
Yeah, and elephants, I mean, they're talking about elephants communicate through thought. I mean, it's actually, and whales too, and them sounds they make. Have you ever seen the buffalo defend their pride, their own kind against the lions?
No, I haven't.
Oh, it's unbelievable. You know, the wildebeest, they take a hike and run. they scatter. But the buffalo, they take on the lions. The buffalo and the lions, they're big rivals.
That's amazing. I would think I do remember seeing a History Channel, or maybe it was an Animal Planet, where some female lions were trying to get a wild boar out of its hole in the ground, and they were having a hard time. I guess the boar was giving them a hard time, and finally the male lion, after much frustration, I guess dinner was late, he stood up, sauntered over to the hole, stuck his paw down in there, and just pulled this 200-pound boar out of there like it was a dust mite.
and that was the end of it.
Yeah, that was the end of it. Just an amazing interaction between two or three animals trying to feed themselves and one trying to defend itself. Just an amazing display of power. So now, is it possible for us in this life, while we're conscious, while we're alive, to remember past lives?
You will get it, yes. It is possible to recall, and you will sense the emotional experiences. When you start to learn to meditate, and this is not the only way of doing it, you'll start to slow down your mind, and you'll be able to access universal energy and the thoughts from your guides and your own higher mind. And it just doesn't happen on day one. It takes a few weeks and a few months. And you'll start to feel yourself drawn to various countries and cultures and some events that's happened in history. And you will really start to learn to trust your feelings. And that within itself is possible for you to remember your past lifetimes.
And maybe we remember a lesson that we learned or that we failed to learn in that past lifetime.
Yeah, that's the number one thing right there. It's all about learning. You know, you don't necessarily want to have to remember what clothes you were wearing or whatever if you were a human being, but it's you will know within yourself. It's no different to the example of sitting down and reflection upon events that happen in your life. You'll sit down, you'll remember like, I am not going to do this. And you've never had an experience in your current lifetime that is warranting your actions now, but you're like, I am not going to do this. I'm not going to go down this path. And that's you learning something from, you're drawing on a lesson learned from your previous lifetime.
Mm.
Or actually, Dr. Agnew, you're drawing on the lesson that's stored in the emotional energy in your higher mind. That was learned through a prior lifetime. So it's all revolves around universal energy.
Well, how many lifetimes may a person have? Will they ever stop having lives?
No, it's infinite.
Infinite.
It's an infinite learning process. The whole theory of universal learning is based around learning to become more like the Creator. And the Creator's God / Superior Spirit. You can call it whatever you like, or if you don't subscribe to universal learning, that's fine. You can call it whatever you want. If you subscribe to no religion, then that's also it's your free will. So the whole theory is based upon learning experiences to become more like the Creator. And the universe, I believe, is transcendent in scale, which is beyond human comprehension. Excuse me. You may say, well, you're a human being, you're writing a book on this, so what do you know about? I'm just stating in writing what I believe I have learned over the ages and the interpretation I get from my own spiritual guides. I trust what I'm being told and what I have borne. I think we all have this knowledge in our mind, and when we learn to unlock it, we'll start to see glimpses of it, and our lifetimes will make sense. But I wish to state again, you'll never, ever have full access to the universal knowledge while you're incarnated into a lifetime.
Mm.
We'll always have that little bit of guessing. But we'll always see glimpses of things that will make us believe, okay, it's kind of like, I understand this now. I think, you know, enlightenment, I believe, is from understanding. And understanding comes from knowledge, and I believe knowledge comes from experiencing and learning. And when you put them all together, let's work backwards, you know, you experience your lifetimes and all these sensations you go through, and you learn from that. that leads you to knowledge. And that knowledge leads you to understanding, and understanding leads to enlightenment.
I don't think I have a fundamental argument with this, because I've always thought, of course, life is immensely complex, it's full of chance. I mean, one could be born in captivity, or you could be aborted before you get a chance to see the light of day. You could be born into extreme poverty or conscripted into war and die before you ever had a chance to live well. So, it's always made sense to me that one mortal life may not be enough for a spirit to gain all the experience we need to progress onward.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And also, I also believe, Dr. Agnew, that you are permitted to come back to Earth and just experience a lifetime, perhaps with a soulmate or even by yourself.
Mm.
With no real crunch lessons, but just a general lifetime of experiencing another lifetime on Earth. Perhaps just for fun and just for the sheer enjoyment and pleasure of it.
Well, I like the idea of a soulmate. I believe I met mine almost 27 years ago. We've been together ever since, and we knew that the moment we met.
Yeah. Yeah. I felt pretty comfortable when I met mine.
That's a good thing.
Pretty relaxed, real. Don't tell her this, but sometimes it doesn't even feel as if we're married or in a relationship. you can tell her that.
We won't tell anyone.
But that shows you how comfortable and how relaxed it is, huh?
Right. Well, now you mentioned the concept of completion in your book, in the process of having these multiple mortal experiences. Maybe you don't get everything right, but you complete certain segments of your higher mind, so that when you're in the next life, you say, you know, I'm not going to make that mistake again. Something tells me I should not do that. And this aligns with a commandment, actually, that Jesus gave his followers. In the English version, it says, He says, be therefore perfect even as your Father which is in heaven is perfect. But the more accurate translation is, be therefore complete, blah, blah, blah. Is this the concept you're talking about in the book, that as you accumulate these lifetimes and master these aspects of interrelations with other people or interrelations with the planet or life forms themselves, you become complete in one form or another?
Yeah, you become more spiritual complete, yeah. Yeah, it's not just like learn. There is a progression, and I believe that once you achieve a certain amount of control over your emotions, because your emotions judge most of your actions, once you achieve that, you're then permitted to move on to other learning within the universe. Now, we say the universe, meaning the living dimensions and the spiritual dimensions as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe there's other learning that takes place in the spiritual dimensions as well, but that's perhaps a little bit later on. I think the Earth is a spectacular planet to incarnate into. There's just so much experiencing you can have here. But it's also a very violent world, always has been. Presently, it looks like it's going to be as well. So there is some progression.
There are peaceful places on the planet. I am looking out the window here, and my AccuWindow forecast here in North Carolina, it's a beautiful sunny evening, and the birds are chirping and the grass is growing. I can almost hear it growing. It's been raining for about a week out here. There are places of peace and tranquility on this planet, and we can even make our own homes that kind of peaceful place. We do not. And I really relate to what you're talking about controlling your emotions and the fact that this is the higher developed human, that the race of man is destined to master this one thing. And honestly, when I turn on the news and I see world leaders themselves just displaying raw emotion, pure anger, no thought process, no thinking for the future or the benefit of the race of man or the planet. It is frightening. It is frightening to see leaders shaking their fists and shooting guns in the air and promising to annihilate one nation or another nation And that is frightening. And I can see why those individuals at least will need more incarnations, I think, to get it right. You know, but something has always happened to me, and I guess I've been able to explain it away, but I want to get your thoughts on it. Every once in a while, you have those deja vu moments, a place that you've been, that you know you've never been before. I mean, I've been to Germany and Scotland and Japan and Mexico, and sometimes I'll walk up upon a situation or I'll meet someone in another country and I'll say to myself, wow, I have either been in this exact place before or I'm really having a strange emotion here. What is all that about?
Yeah. Well, it's either two things. It's one, it's a vision you saw prior to your lifetime, like a preordained event or situation. Or two, it is guidance from your guides during your dream state that their visions are foretelling that these are going to come to pass, these events in your life. And that's why we all have a kind of a – these visions come to us, Dr. Agnew, and then before you know it, a couple of months later, a few weeks later, you're planning a trip and you're enrolling in a college degree or whatever. And then you find yourself in that situation where you – It's the most amazing feeling, Al, and that is one of the proofs that we all have, that there is something other than just a one life of lifetime, and when you pass, you're finished. That to me is one of the, when people say we need proof, and say, well, what about your deja vu experiences? You know, science, I don't think we'll ever be able to prove that one down.
Well, it goes beyond that. It's not just, you know, places that you go. I've gone into, you know, channel surfing or something, and I'll see, like an old episode of...
it's amazing, isn't it? Picking up a sponge to clean your bathroom, huh?
Wouldn't it be neat if it was that same program I saw about 25 years ago? I remember seeing an episode of this, and you turn it on, and darned if it isn't exactly the same episode you saw 25 years ago.
Or
you're talking to a friend and you say, you know, I really would like to see this movie or that movie again. And the next thing you know, the next night it's on public TV and you have no idea.
Yeah.
That's more than an alternate lifetime. That's almost like being separated from time or...
Well, it's inner guidance. When I say inner guidance, we're talking just of not just yourself and your own higher mind. You're talking about your spiritual guides. There is a spiritual force with every single human being and life form while you're incarnated at all times, sometimes even more than once with you.
Wow.
And I can feel their presence all the time. And when you ask God and your guides for guidance and you pray, you say, please guide me to control my emotions in my life. Then what happened six months ago when I asked for this, Dr. Agnew, now, whenever, this may seem a little bit spooky to some people, but I can assure you I physically feel this. Every time this happens, when I have a negative thought or when I have an anger thought, it starts to swell up in me over an event that has just happened, I get a small tingling sensation at the back of my head. And that's like a little warning sign, like, okay, here you go again, you're going down this road, don't do it. And that is the power of inner guidance. Now, a lot of psychics I've spoken to, even prior to I started having this experience, they often said they get their guidance from the almost feels like from the rear of the back of their head. They feel the presence sometimes in a touch, sometimes a gentle stroking of the hair. They can feel it. You won't feel it unless you ask for it. They'll never physically be a presence in your life unless you ask for it. They'll never harm you. They're only there for your own good. And we all know they're there.
I've heard people say to me when I've been speaking to them or interviewing them that they almost hear a voice. They'll be driving down the highway and it'll be a little foggy or their mind will be drifting and all of a sudden they'll hear a voice that will say, slow down or get off the highway right here. I know this isn't your exit, but get off the highway right now.
Yeah.
And they do. They just slow down and get off the highway, and the next thing you know, there's a big 10-car pileup they would have been in the middle of.
That's right.
One of my friends, He has 9 kids and brave soul. And he, when they were young, would go camping. And they were out west and they were camping in a Buck Canyon. I believe it was in southern Utah. Anyway, a beautiful sunny day, just, you know, getting ready to get out the hot dogs and chips and have dinner. And all of a sudden, he just got this impression, this feeling, this something spoke to him, said, pack up all the kids, put all the gear back in the station wagon, and move on to the next campsite. You're not supposed to go for 2 more days, but go now. So being, I called him, he was in tune. He just, you know, his kids were hungry, and the wife was getting the paper plates out, and he said, I know you're going to think this is really strange, but let's put everything back in the cooler, put it all in the car, we're going on to the next campsite. And I guess the family didn't fight him too much, the way he tells the story, and they just went on to the next place, paid a couple nights of camping fee, and went on. And that night, there was a rainstorm about 20 miles away in the mountains, and a flash flood came down that Fox Canyon and wiped out that campground. There were several people killed.
Oh.
And his family would most assuredly have lost their lives had he not listened to that voice and packed up the kids and moved on.
Yeah.
And you know, I don't know if the Creator, the God in heaven or our Father in heaven, as much as he has created, and I know that time doesn't mean anything to him, I just think that he would delegate that kind of communication to some other qualified being. Like, you call it a spirit guide.
Yeah.
People have called it, I think, a guardian angel.
Yeah.
It might have the same name. I'm not sure. Maybe they're a different being. But I almost believe that very thing, that there is some other dimensional being who is fully conscious of us and our awareness and is more or less assigned to us. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, absolutely. That's exactly what I'm saying.
Wow.
And they are there
the
to help
you. Life?
I'm sorry?
Do we have the same one for life, or do they...
You can do. Sometimes they change, but there's always one with you. Always. Always. Absolutely. I think more often than not, it's just the same guide right the way through your lifetime. But guides can change. Hypothetically, let's say you were the guide for me, and then you wanted to incarnate into a lifetime yourself. During my lifetime, then someone would come in and guide and protect me.
Now, if you're living your life with your soulmate, and she has her spirit guide, and you have your spirit guide, and they're with you always, does that help you in your relationship? Does it help you maybe sense when something is not right with that person, either emotionally or physically, so that you can physically be there and care about that person?
Well, I think you're very much in tune with your soulmate, because probably prior to your lifetime you already know them in the spiritual form. So you tend to be on an unseen psychic wavelength with them, that you can sense when something's not quite right. Prior to even opening the door, coming home.
Mm.
Excuse me. And you can even have them same feelings with other people that have come to pass in your life, relationships that have come to pass. These people are still alive today in various parts of the world. And you will know when someone else is in trouble or in pain, because you'll sense their discomfort through the transference of universal energy through your higher mind. You'll sense it. Your thoughts will dwell on them, and you will sense almost in your gut that something's not quite right. So with your soulmates, I'm saying soulmates plural, because I class soulmates as not only perhaps your wife, your husband, your lover, your partner, wherever, even as friends and as family members too. So I generally kind of put a plural on soulmates and encompass a more broader sense, but we all relate to soulmates really as our wife, husband, or our partner, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I do believe that you're very much in tune with them.
You know, when I think of the series of events that had to take place in order for us to meet in the first place, I was...
Oh, yeah, you're guided, yeah, you're guided, yeah.
Born in
both
Kentucky.
Of you are guided in.
Yeah, it's like if we did know each other in a prior life or in this spirit existence that you talk about, and we decided that we're gonna find each other when we get down to Earth, that seems like a very difficult promise to keep.
Long shot.
If you just do it on your own, but if you have a spirit guide saying no. You need to take this job here or that job there, and now you're going to get fired, and you're going to move over here, and now you're going to meet your soulmate.
Yeah.
And well,
it's funny how it sorts itself out, but it does in the end. For most of us, you know,
I hope we pay attention to that. We have about 30 seconds left in this hour, and I will do about 5 minutes obligatory commercials, and then we will come back straight at the top of the hour. My guest is Sandy Andrew. He is the author of Your Never-Ending Life. It's book one of the Universal Learning series, and I expect we will see other books from him. His website is, let me see if I can catch it again here. I'm going too fast up and down this thing. UniversalLearningSeries.com, right?
Yes.
And if they go to universallearningseries.com, they will be able to get to this main page and find all this great information. So we will take about 5 minutes of commercials, and we'll be right back at the top of the hour.
Okay.
One of the great things we've learned here at X Squared Radio from our emails is that many of our listeners to this program are educators. Well, we have recently added a great affiliate for you. The Academic Superstore is the place where you can buy software, neat tools and gadgets, and even supplies such as calculators and iPod peripherals at huge discounts. The best things for the classroom and the student are just a tax-free click away. All you have to do is click the Academic Superstore sign at X Squared Radio and start saving. Well, the space shuttle fleet is going to very soon be retired. No other spacecraft in history has advanced the world more than this fleet. I wanted a way to keep that memory alive in my home, so I went to the space store and ordered a 25-inch model of the Space Orbiter. People who have seen it always comment on the incredible attention to detail in this model. I think if you know someone who loves the space program the way I do, and you want to get them a gift that they will never forget, you should visit the Space Store at X Squared Radio. With Father's Day coming up, that is a very great place to shop. People are always looking for something inexpensive and unique to give people they love. Well, now there is a way to give a gift that not only says how long you will love them, but it will allow you to keep the planet green and growing. Tree Givers is the company that will plant a tree on public land somewhere in the 50 states and provide your special person with a beautiful certificate of that placement. This has become one of the most popular gift sites in the world. And because of their love for the Earth, they are changing the world. So visit Tree Givers at X Squared Radio and see if you can find a gift for your special person. I mentioned earlier in the program that amateurs always find the greatest discoveries. Well, have you ever thought about owning a really good telescope? Well, at the Discovery Store, you can find the world's best telescopes at great discounts and free shipping. They have come a long way, you know. All you have to do is set them up, program which planet or star or nebula you want to go to, and it will go straight there. In fact, most of the comets discovered in the last 50 years were found by amateurs. There is no better way to view the sun than with a Coronado scope. Trust me, you will be captivated if you ever get a chance to see the sun through one of these units. Who knows? You just might save the planet. So plan a trip to the Discovery Store at X Squared Radio. Did you know that 11 of the 12 sets of footprints on the moon were made by Eagle Scouts? It's true. Soon, men and women will be doing the real moonwalk. But just so we don't forget, the first footprint on the moon has been replicated in a limited edition plaque that would make the perfect gift for a court of honor. Maybe you need something special for your office or your library at home. This high-quality plaque can add that special something that lets people know you are excited about that we are returning to the moon. So visit Countdown Creations at X Squared Radio today and order your limited edition First Step on the Moon plaque. As you know, you probably know the radio host Kevin Smith at kevinsmithshow.com. He has recently authored a new book. That book is entitled Gods in the Garden. It's excellent. I've read it. I highly recommend it. It is now in print. You can get it by going to the online store at X Squared Radio and ordering the book today. It will be delivered immediately and autographed. We will take a short 48-second musical interlude, and then we will be back with my guest, Sandy Andrew. This is X Squared Radio. Welcome back, Earth Explorers, to X Squared Radio. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. This is where the past meets the future. My guest is Sandy Andrew. His book, Your Never-Ending Life, it is book one of the Universal Learning Series. His website, universallearningseries.com. I wanted to bring up in the last hour, but I want to finish up when we were talking about that. I had some really close calls when I was doing some silly things when I was younger that, they should have been fatal. And they weren't. But it was as if someone stepped in and snatched me from the jaws of death. And I got the loud and clear message, don't do that again.
Yeah.
But right now is not your time to die. And I can't believe how clear that message was. Can a spirit guide, as we were talking in our last hour, can a spirit guide act like a guardian angel and actually, you know, physically move you out of harm's way?
Well, I believe they will strongly, like, the feeling like you always hear a voice, get off the highway, as your
mm-hmm.
example earlier, or you need to quit smoking or it's all going to be over. You will get such a strong feeling that you will take action. I can relate this myself, if I may give you an example of smoking cigarettes when I was younger. I stopped and started and stopped and started, and when I was in South Africa, I just couldn't get off them properly. And I felt that if I didn't stop smoking full time, Dr. Agnew, that I would die in my 30s, and I would not have fulfilled at all the work that I was destined to do here on Earth.
Well,
and it was kind of probably similar to what you were feeling, like this is going to be the end if you don't do something right now. And I got the courage from somewhere to just to crack the nicotine, and in the end it was actually very, very simple, once and for all.
Well, I was actually racing one time, and I was going pretty fast, a little over 100 miles an hour, and I lost control of my motorcycle on the racetrack, and I slid into a barricade that should have killed me.
Oh.
But I walked away from it. It was just as if a giant hand reached out and just snatched me
yeah.
and picked me up over the barricade, and I landed in the gravel, and with the exception of some scrapes and bumps, you know, I was pretty good. I walked away from it. But I looked at the films, and I thought, there's no way that should have happened. But I got the clear and distinct message that you have something to do later in your life. This is not the time for you to die.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's what transpired there. I think if you went out and did it time and time again on the hour, every hour, eventually something would physically happen to you.
You know what? It reminds me of a show I saw on television, and it was, I think, one of these amazing video shows. And it was a guy who had a helmet camera, and he was skydiving. And when he opened his chute got fouled, and only half of it opened, and he was coming down pretty quickly. And the sound was on his camera, and he was saying things like, "Oh Lord, if you just get me to the ground, I'll never jump again." And you could see the camera going round and round. You could see trees, road, dirt as he came down and down and down, spinning around. And all of a sudden, the camera lands sideways in the dirt. And then about 3 seconds later, the camera raises up upright, and the guy was unharmed. And you can just hear him screaming in joy that he'd made it. But the narrator said that he did jump another 550 times after that, so he didn't keep his promise at all. I thought maybe he was tempting fate when he did that.
Well, there was a pilot for the Royal Air Force in World War II. He was on a bombing raid over Germany whose bomber was hit by flak fire, who actually jumped out without a parachute. And when crashing through the trees over in Norway, the route was, and landed in something ridiculous like 20 feet of snow, and he had broken ribs and a leg, but he survived.
Wow.
Yeah, he survived. He didn't even have a shoe. Huh? He came crashing through the trees, and so to me, it's amazing. I mean, if you and I tried that today over Norway through the trees and snows, perhaps we wouldn't make it, but he did. He survived, and the German intelligence were really having a hard time believing it. But there he was. He couldn't walk. I mean, he was really, you know, on skid row, but he survived. He made it.
He lived.
And that was without a parachute.
Are we able to communicate with our spirit guide, or is all the communication one way?
No. It's more us communicating with them, because they can read and sense every single thought, and they also hear everything we speak as well. That's why when I was giving you the example earlier about sometimes our minds can wander and sometimes on negative thoughts, and you will feel that small, well, I do anyway, most people don't, but you feel that small presence in the back of your head saying, mm-hmm. okay, stop dwelling on this. So the flow of information is probably 99% from you to them, from you to the universe, which they are right there with you, and they are seeing all of the information going back and forth from you and other people. And then if you when you learn to kind of quiet your mind and truly just open your own heart, you know, we always like to blame everyone else for everything that goes on in our life, and we all do this and we're all guilty of it, but when you truly open your heart and kind of look within, you'll start to listen to them. You'll start to understand.
Are the spirit guides the only ones that can give us impressions or thoughts? I seem to have recalled someone telling me that evil spirits also exist and can put thoughts in our minds and see if we entertain them by action.
Yeah. There is spirits out there that, look at how many atrocities goes on in the world today, rapings and murders and all that sort of thing. And while these spirits are in transit, ready to incarnate again to redeem themselves, so to speak, their energy and their thoughts are floating around the universe. And one of the things you've got to be careful of, and when you start to meditate and you start to open your mind, you're opening up yourself. It's just like almost like a firewall on a computer. You're opening yourself up to all the energy of the universe. Yeah. And you've got to be careful. You're like a radar beacon, huh? And these negative, you can attract just as much negative energy as what you can positive energy. And you've got to be able to control your emotions in order to deflect the negative energy. And We all kind of struggle with that. The older we get, the more calmer we become, the more experienced in life, and the better we are. But when we're from about 16 to 25, we're just a bunch of loose cannons just firing all over the place. I mean, we don't necessarily going out doing nasty things, but when things happen in our life, you know, we you know, fly off the handle, you know, like you say, Scottish style, punch first, ask questions later, huh? You know, that's totally unacceptable.
Exactly right.
But that's what we all, well, that's what used to happen years ago in Britain. It's kind of smack each other in the mouth and then go down the pub for a beer and have a good laugh about it.
Yep. I remember those younger days. You use the term higher mind in your book, and you mentioned it earlier. What is the higher mind?
Okay.
Are you, may I, I'm sorry to interject, are you taking calls this program?
Oh, yes, absolutely. We'll take
okay, well, we've had a few. I didn't want to interject, but we'll put this one right on.
All right. I think we have a caller on the line. Your first name and where you're calling from, please. Oh, there he is. We have a caller on the line. Your first name and where you're calling from, please.
Hi, I'm Sandy, and I'm in Vancouver, Washington.
Well, Sandy, meet Sandy.
Hi, Sandy. You must be pretty cool. No, you were talking about certain things that got my interest, so I had to call to tell you this quick story. And it's going to sound funny because it was on Oprah, but this little boy was on, and his dad had come in and stabbed his mother to death. And then stabbed him and left and thought he was dead. And he wasn't. And Oprah was talking to him and she was like, well, how did you get to the phone to call the, you know, the 911? And he goes, the angels picked me up.
Wow.
I know. And she didn't say anything. So I was really glad because, you know, when a little boy speaks, it's that young, you know, they say only what they saw.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You don't have to question them because they're so honest and so innocent. But it just really got my heart, so I just wanted to say that.
Okay.
Well, there are lots of stories like that out there, I can tell you. And I've heard them called angels, I've heard them called immortals or shining ones, all kinds of different names. But they seem to step forward, just like Sandy Andrews saying, that when that, you know, maybe that little boy has something else to do in his life, and it was not his time to die. So it was time for him to dial 911 and survive.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what the people around him thought. I mean, all the people that, like, were there who came to rescue him, because when he called, when they traced the phone back, they weren't sure if the kid was telling the truth that had been stabbed to death. You know, he goes, my dad stabbed me to death. And the people that were all involved were still, like, his little guardians and saying, we know you have something that you were meant to do. We know that's why you didn't die. But when they had searched for the call, the phone was under a different address, so they couldn't find him.
Wow.
And they eventually found him and got there just as the dad was returning.
Oh. So they were able to apprehend him.
Yes. So and plus save him, because he was almost dead. The kid was just barely living.
Good. Well,
but anyway, I just wanted to say that.
Thank you very much for calling from Vancouver, Washington. That's Sandy.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I've seen lots of, or read lots of stories like that. I've listened to testimonies like that where people have been rescued miraculously out of fires or floods or little kids that have fallen through the ice in a pond and stories like that. These spirit guides, I've actually heard that term in other circles as well, that people that practice a lot of out-of-body or remote viewing or things like that, they do talk about a spirit guide. And they do it rather casually, and I'm a newcomer to this. I have always felt that I'm kind of in charge. I'm sort of making my own decisions, my own explorations, and as a scientist, I have reached out when I've reached the end of every document, every instrument that I have in my hands, and tried to find an answer. And that answer has come, I'm going to say, in a supernatural way, in some ways. And even mathematicians that I've studied, like Dr. Riemann or even Nikola Tesla, often talked about spiritual experiences that sort of gave them the idea or the finished mathematics that they needed to get to the next level.
Yeah. Well, Dr. Agnew, I would say that you mentioned about you think you're in control. You are. you're the one who makes all the decisions, every single one of them. And the guidance you get, it's up to you if you want to take that and make them decisions. Now, when a situation occurs, like the caller mentioned about the young boy being stabbed, or yourself in your motorcycle accident, that's the decision was already made to ride the bike. So it was an accident that, you know, accidents can happen any time, and that was, you can call it divine intervention, you can call it a good rollover, a barricade, or whatever. I do believe that the human being, the spirit incarnated into the life form, really is in control of the decisions that they make. But there is certain amount of preordained experiences that we're going to face.
Sort of a roster of experiences that you're going to have to go through in life.
Yeah, there's, like, for example, when my mother and father separated, the day that my mother told me that she was no longer, and I quote, "I am no longer living with Dad," unquote, I had a very strong deja vu experience right then, and I know within my heart that was a preordained vision I saw prior to incarnation. That was not something that came to me in a dream state from the guides warning or advising me of an event that was going to come. That was meant to be, that experience. And it was an experience, I can tell you.
But it wasn't a surprise.
I'm sorry?
But it wasn't a surprise.
No, it wasn't. No, it wasn't. It was a shock, but it wasn't a surprise, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So to talk about your original statement there, I think we are in control of all the decisions that we, it's our responsibility and it's up to us, but we have the option of the guidance that is with us at all times. Mm. And a lot of the time, Dr. Agnew, you'll find that you're making decisions based on the guidance from your guides, because it subconsciously flows through you all the time.
Well, I hope that we are in tune with the good side, the bright side, and not the dark side of wayward spirits.
The light side and the dark side always comes into a conversation sooner or later.
Yeah,
it's positive and negative, and not all negative experiences are in truly negative. We all learn from them. You just mustn't go out and really cause anybody any cold-blooded harm. That's the golden rule. If you just don't stay away from that, you'll be fine. You'll be fine. You may have some nasty experiences in your life, but you just stay away from that, and you'll be fine. Those people who go out and, like this guy who just stabbed his young son, I mean, my goodness, whatever possesses someone to do such a thing?
I never could answer that question.
And nor can I.
Even when I see in the news when somebody straps explosives to themselves and goes to a marketplace or a restaurant and does that, I cannot identify with that level of despair. I do, just as an aside, have this feeling that it is the result of the greatest case of indoctrination since Satan drew a third of the host of heaven with him to hell. It's, to raise a child with the thought that the only way to heaven is to die in battle that way is the darkest kind of indoctrination there ever was.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, Doctor, one of the things about universal learning is that it embraces all. It doesn't discriminate against any religion, because we talked about mathematical equations. There's only one mathematical statement I said in my book, is the amount of stars they're estimating in this living dimension. As we know, there's about 400 billion stars in the Milky Way galaxy estimated. And then we have 125 billion other galaxies within this living dimension estimated at this time. That is an estimated 1 to the power of 22 stars. And that's, for the listeners, that's 1 and 22 zeros, the amount of stars that are estimated in this living dimension, which most of you commonly refer to as the universe. Now, do we think that Christianity, Islam, paganism, Buddhism, whatever, is the be-all and end-all of all them trillions upon trillions upon trillions of stars that do have some type of life form on them? I don't believe so. I think every human being is entitled to their own religious faith, or none at all, and they should be left in peace to pursue that, providing they harm no other in which any manner they see fit.
My own personal opinion on that is that religion is irrespective of one's relationship with God. Religion is maybe an organized way to get together and worship or do some rituals or have some kind of point of focus or social structure, but I think that one's relationship with the Father or the Creator is completely independent of the word or the function of religion.
Absolutely. You don't need to go anywhere outside your own front door to be with your Creator.
Well said.
You don't, and I tell that to my wife as well. I says, you know, Erica, we don't need to join any church anymore. We don't need to go to anything because you live your life hour by hour, day by day, outside of that in places of worship, and that's what you're here for. But like I say, you know, excuse me, if people want to go to a mosque or a Catholic church, they have the universal free right to do so and should be left in peace and shouldn't have some maniac, whether you said with explosive straps and walking into a synagogue or whatever, or marketing, and killing them because they worship a god or creator in a different format to someone else. That type of action, Dr. Agnew, is pure hate. That's all that is. And then people that flew them planes into the Twin Towers on September 11th, they are just full of hate, them people.
And that's definitely
there is absolutely
negative.
No justification for that.
And that's definitely negative. That's definitely not the positive.
Absolutely.
I don't know what their spirit guides were doing at that time, but obviously they didn't have the power to stop them from doing that.
What human beings, they, you know, we live in a living, breathing planet, and human beings will create the destiny of Earth one way or the other.
And that may be one of those predestined moments that was supposed to happen, too.
Well, that's the gray area that people ask me, what is and what isn't. Well, human behavior is very easy to predict. I believe that Adolf Hitler, there was practically almost no stopping him on his rise to power. And I believe that it wasn't meant to happen for the benefit of humanity, but by the course of actions, human beings following him, there was no stopping him right until the end, when by good fortune, the three powers, Britain, Russia, and the United States, eventually stopped him. I dread to think what the world would have been like if he had have succeeded, especially Europe anyway.
Well, earlier we were talking about the term higher mind in your book, and you had said that that's the same as the soul of a person. This higher mind is what, the conduit through which we communicate with the spirit guide and with the Creator?
Yes, we digressed a little bit. I remember that was your original question about 20 minutes ago. Your spirit, I believe, is comprised of your higher mind and your soul. And they're both the same thing. I just break them up like that so people can follow it. And I view your higher mind as kind of like the processor, the brain of your spirit, so to speak. Where you draw on all the knowledge and your guidance from your spiritual guides. And then I classify your soul as almost like a deep well full of all the emotions and all the deep, deep learning, and the true character of your soul, of your spirit, is represented in your soul. And there's a combination of the two of them equal your spirit.
Mm-hmm.
for all intents and purposes, the spirit, the higher mind, your soul, it's all the same thing. It's all your same thing. But I use the term higher mind. People think of your mind as your brain. That's not quite right in terms of what I teach.
Mm-hmm.
I view the higher mind really as like the process of the brain that draws upon the guidance of the universe and your spiritual guides and helps you make the decisions in your lifetime.
Right. Well, I guess the brain is not really the personality of a person. The person that makes up Sandy, that makes up Brooks, it existed a long time before this mortal tabernacle was made.
Yeah.
And, you know, sure, we come into this world as an infant. We have to rely completely upon our parents for support. We learn at an incredible rate. Then we learn language. We learn to move around in this body. We learn its limitations and its sensations. And then we begin about having our effect or being affected by the universe. And those experiences that we gain through our mortal frame store up in our spirit, in our soul. And we are saying our higher mind. And we, through one lifetime after another, it appears, we change, we grow, we expand. And our personality, our soul, our higher mind, changes with every passing moment of our life.
Yeah.
Every love that we experience, every pain that we experience, even the deaths that we experience. And all this makes complete sense to me. And then someone asks me a question like, is there a heaven and hell?
Are you asking that question, is there heaven and hell?
Yeah, what is the answer to that?
Well, I don't believe there's a hell. There's an afterworld, and perhaps one could interpret. I don't believe there's a hell where Satan's sitting with a fork and flames all around him. Like I said earlier, anything that any actions and deeds that you have done in a negative way, you'll have to redeem yourself by incarnating again into another lifetime of learning. Now, you could say, why can't you just go in front of God and apologize? Well, the whole point of universal learning, the whole point of life is, in essence, real-time learning. This is it. This is absolutely real. Somebody pinches you in the arm, you feel it. You know, someone breaks up with you when you're younger, having a relationship, you know, you feel the pain. You have the opportunity. Someone says, here's $500,000 if you cook the books of this company. I'll give it to you. They'll never trace it. There you go. Here's your test. Can you do it? Yes or no? So, you know, heaven and hell, heaven people, a lot of Christians call it heaven and nirvana, whatever. It's just your afterworld, your spiritual home, where every single life force that incarnates returns to. And we all belong to different dimensions. We all have our own soulmates there. So, and then hell, I view, Doctor, that there is no per se hell with Lucifer sitting there with his big fork ready to give you a hard time.
No place of eternal damnation.
No. 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 I don't. You have an eternity's worth of time to make up for all the karmic debts that you owe, so I think that's a major task within itself.
If I look at this from a scientific point of view, then I see the point of development of each human being then is infinitely variable from one human to another. One is going to be more complete, more experienced, less in karmic debt than the next person. And I see the eternal process of growth. Now, My assumption is that we all cannot live the same time period. We have to kind of come in as there's room and beings on the earth to create bodies. So that being said, here in the year 2006, there are souls on the earth that are very, very experienced, almost masters at certain things. And there are other souls that are not so experienced at all. and maybe even primitive. How, and this process is eternal, well, I guess I'm going to get to a little deeper question that I want to ask right now, but I do want to go into that in some depth, so I'll be thinking about it. And the question I want to ask is what is heaven like? You know, what? Why do we go there?
Well, I view heaven as our eternal home. It's the afterworld of our spiritual energy,
mm-hmm.
and that's where we were created by the Creator, and that's where we belong. Some people have said to me that heaven can be, this is some spiritual people, psychics, whatever, just in casual conversation, say that heaven can be anything you want, meaning if you love a forest or whatever, like an earth forest, when you pass on, you'll find yourself in a plane, a dimensional plane, very similar to that. The feeling I get from heaven is just pure peace and utter contentment.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I would describe myself. I do subscribe to this, some other people's theories about it can be anything you want, but my description of the afterworld or heaven would just be pure peace and utter contentment. Just pure peace.
I hope that I get to explore the parts of the universe that I've never seen. I've always been fascinated with space travel. I've always been fascinated with astronomy, and I don't feel that one mortal life is enough time to look at stars, because even 100 years is a cosmic flash compared to what goes on in the universe. I would think that, at least for me, heaven would be a place where I could do unlimited exploration
Doctor, I believe that when you pass, you are instantly turned on again to all the universal knowledge that's out there, all your previous lifetimes, all the answers to creation, the Creator, all your soulmates, it's all there. Your higher mind, when you leave your incarnated body, doesn't operate like a brain, meaning we have to finish one conversation at a time. The information is instantaneous. But when you reincarnate into a world, you can't have that. It's like taking an examination, having all the answers in front of you. Here's 1 to 20, here's the answers, and here's 1 to 20, here's the questions. Huh?
Not much learning going on.
No. And that's the one thing that we all have in common, is that we all learn, and most of us learn from our mistakes, some of us don't. That's the one common ground that, that during these turbulent times, all human beings can... We all have emotions, and we all learn.
Well, humans, I mean, we learn, yes, and we learn in school, we learn by life experience, we learn from watching TV or surfing the Internet, but we have an ability to reach out somewhere. I don't know if it's into space or time. We have an ability to get information from some other source. So is there... this a universal source of knowledge out there for people, I mean mortals that want to know, want to have instant, well not instant, but want to have access to knowledge beyond what they can learn in their present circumstances. Is there a source of universal knowledge?
Well, I would say there's a source of universal knowledge within their own mind, their own higher mind. To answer your question, no, not while you're incarnated. You won't be able to get the answers A to Z all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
But you will see glimpses, and we all see glimpses in our lifetime, whether it's deja vu or just inner feelings or instances where our life is perhaps saved that give us the reassurance that there is something else other than just a one-shot lifetime, and when you pass, you're dead, and that's the end of it. So that's our source of universal knowledge, that we can just see glimpses of it, little skimmings off the top, so to speak, lifetime on Earth.
I'm not saying
I also,
make
lazy. Doctor, you mentioned about space exploration and traveling the stars. I'm sure there's many viewers that are listeners that are doubting our capabilities to travel that far. And yet, you know, 2,000 years ago, most of the human beings, they never even left 50 miles from their own village or thought the world was flat. And, you know, man would never fly. And I wrote that in my book as well, just some small, simple, easy-to-read examples. And
yeah, we were pretty much traveling by horseback up until about 130 years ago.
There you go. There you go. You know, now we're traveling space and sending out probes, and it'll all be a matter of time. A lot of people kind of say, well, why haven't any aliens visited us? Well, I do believe they have, and I do believe there has been some cover-ups, but let's do a little analogy here. Who right now would probably want to go to Baghdad on a nighttime and go walking around the streets? Probably not many people, okay? So you say, what's that got to do with aliens? Well, who wants to come to a world where everybody's knocking the two-ton living daylights out of each other and can't even agree on the basic human rights? We're quite primitive as a race. There's many of us that would like to change that, and maybe have the capability and who are developed. But as you indicated earlier, we're almost at the mercy of the leaders of the countries and territories of the world and their rhetoric, and if I was passing by a world and I was an alien, or if we were humans exploring and I saw a world similar to ours, I would almost be tempted to reveal ourselves, but also the same token, I thought, well, these guys need just a little bit more developing here. Not too much, but just a little bit more. They need to unify their people, as opposed to all the war and strife that we tend to go at.
Well, I think writing your book is part of that battle, because you mentioned that we were at the mercy of the rhetoric of our leaders, and when I was a kid, there used to be a saying, you know, what happened if they gave a war and nobody came? But that's not so far-fetched when you start thinking that, you know, there are billions of spirit guides out there standing next to people telling them, this is something you don't need to do. What would happen if we were able to enhance our ability to be sensitive to those kinds of things? And a leader stood up and said, okay, tomorrow we're all getting on airplanes and we're going to go over and kick the daylights out of this other country. And everybody in the country said, you know what, I think I'll pass. I think this is something I don't want to do. And so there's the general out there on the path.
Unfortunately, you've got the draft, and World War II days and prior, you either got out there or you were shot.
Well, that's true, but... so you shoot your whole nation, and still nobody left to go to war. You know, the United States is kind of funny that way, and since the 60s, we've sort of been that way. We said, okay, you know, if they attack us, then sure, they get us angry and we'll go do something. But you know, in about 18 months, we lose the flavor for it. We're ready for everybody to come home and go back to work, and you know, okay, we gave them 30 days of it. They'll never do it again. That's just the kind of people we are. We're not, you know, regardless of what the news says, we're not warmongers. We want to see the bad guys put away, and we want to see the bad guys taken out of power, because we don't want to hear from them again. But we don't go to war just to go to war. And when we go to war, we, at least these days, do it quite a bit differently than we did even 30 years ago or 40 years ago. We don't go bomb the living daylights out of them. We pick one building, one person, one bomb, slide it into a mailbox and with complete precision, and move on. Warfare is not anything like what it was, and it is getting ready to change again. And it's all, I think, driven by this. I know you're going to really think this is crazy, but I think that the race of mankind is about to, for all intents and purposes, mutate. We're becoming aware, just like you're talking about in your book, that there's a karmic debt that we're trying to set straight this time around. We want to change as a race. We've realized that there's enough water, there's enough food, there's enough energy, there's enough education and knowledge for everyone.
Yes.
There's no reason to kill another human being.
No, I mean, you're absolutely right. Absolutely right. There is no need for it. And that's the fear that's stoking a lot of this conflict in the world today. This net, and the internet is one of the main fears that, for example, China, they give access to the country, the internet, but they restrict various informative sites. And the world, I think, is going through a tremendous change in awareness, and it's the same old thing. Those organizations that stand to lose, they are the ones that seem to be stoking the fires, and all these conflicts are up. I think perhaps if we can keep anybody from launching a nuclear attack against each other, whether it's terrorists or an organized government, I think in about 150 years from now, I think the world will be a lot more unified and calmer place if we can just hang on and just stop any major outbreak of any weapons of mass destruction. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that the United States or anyone else should go in and start another war here or elsewhere, but you also have the right to defend yourself.
Sure.
You know, we touched a little bit on the problems in Iraq, and, you know, it's a topic that a lot of people don't really want to talk about, but, you know, I must say that in the slight defense of the coalition, Saddam Hussein is a murderer. He has used chemical weapons on his own people, and at the time in 2002 leading up to the war, even France and Russia and China agreed that he was developing WMD. Now, he supports terrorism. He was apparently supposed to be making WMD. What do you do? I mean, you're damned if you do and damned if you don't. Are you supposed to let him just carry on and make it, and they drop it off outside the harbor in New York City, and bang, there it goes? Or you go in, and then you find nothing. I mean, it's not an easy situation, and there's, like you say, 18 months, everybody's kind of sick of it and fed up of it, and it's not a pleasant situation at all, and the Iraqis are getting killed left, right, and center, and it just comes back to these governments and organizations in the world that rule by fear and terrorism, and they put everybody in this position in the first place. That's the root of the problem here, is you have these dictators who are running these countries, and this fellow in Iran, he's going to cause major problems, this man, and I don't get a very good vibe from him at all. I kind of want to give him the benefit of the doubt, Dr. Agnew, but I look at him and I just don't feel any sense of comfort at all. And his threats he makes on a daily basis are certainly alarming a lot of people. And they're merely just isolating Iran rather than helping the country.
My personal opinion is I think the guy's a clown. And if the press didn't give him the time of day, he would go away. But, you know, people say truth is truth. But truth in the wrong hands can do serious damage to the world. So these spirit guides that provide information for people that are inquiring, what do I do now? What is the secret to success, to reaching my goals? Maybe those goals are not so lofty. Maybe they're, you know, conquest of the world. So does every human have the same right to access to the truth, regardless of their intentions?
You mean access to the truth in terms of the just basic knowledge of human life and events that occur in our world?
Well, not just that, but knowledge that comes forth from spirit guides or from this universal source of knowledge that they can reach.
Yeah, everyone has the capability and the right to access that.
So they could use it for good or evil.
Well, I think they're told the right thing to do in terms of fulfillment of their lessons of learning in their lifetime, because we all have different lessons of learning. We all can't be the President of the United States. Not that anybody would want that job, but we all can't be CEO of General Electric. So we get guided along for the fulfillment of our lessons, the meaning that perhaps I really have, let's say for example, I have to make up a lot of bad karmic debt, and I really have to dig in and have some, kind of get mucked around with some people and really get my nose rubbed in it a few times. And if that's what leads me to be fulfilled, then so be it. But I don't think there's any guidance, well, no, there's not, that promotes rape, theft, and murder, for example. No, that's I believe them decisions are made upon the human being, just on their own conscience. We all have egos, and the trouble is, when you start getting a little bit of success in your life, or you start getting cocky and you think you know it all, your ego and your own selfish greed can really run rampant, huh?
Yeah, I believe that. That's a very common human trait. But I have to admit, there seems to be some kind of, or at least a pattern, as a scientist I can see it, statistically it seems to show up, some kind of pattern of coordination between evil around the world. It's as though they're all tapped into the same fax machine. This is the sin that we're going to commit upon the earth this decade, and it doesn't matter whether you're in Malaysia or Los Angeles or Kansas City. It seems like the same kinds of crimes are going on, and the same heinous kinds of human beings are committing almost exactly the same kind of perpetrations, whether they be kidnapping or child molestation or murder or drug use or illegal drug abuse. It doesn't matter. I know that they don't have some kind of shortwave radio and they're not all communicating with one another. How are we going to act today? But it does seem as though there is some common instigator to all of this. That it's sending out, or he or she or a group of them are sending out this almost supernatural marching orders to humans who are acting upon that knowledge. Instead of deciding not to, they're entertaining those thoughts and then turning those thoughts into actions. And from a law enforcement standpoint, or a military standpoint, or a political standpoint, they look pretty much the same.
Yeah, I mean, history does repeat itself, and even small history of small crimes, local crimes, seem to repeat themselves again and again and again. Now, we talked earlier about positive energy and negative energy, and how you can attract both, and how you deal with the negative energy is very, very, very important. Now, that's what's probably transpiring there. All these events that take place during the world, people just give in to their own selfish greed, their own egos. They're going to rule the world. They're going to change this. They're going to change that. Someone said to me once, this lady, just a casual conversation, that she believed that there was some type of spiritual warfare going on between good and evil. And I talked a little bit about, well, when you open your mind and you start to meditate, or just open your mind in general to the knowledge of the universe, you start attracting positive and negative energy. And the more I can assure you, the more psychically and in tune with universal energy you become, the more powerful them negative emotions can be, especially if you're a passionate person as well. If you're a go-getter and you're up and at them, it can be quite a challenge to suppress them. The human mind, or your higher mind rather, can be a great, great asset, but it can also be your downfall as well.
So when you meditate and you lower this human firewall, and we tap into the non-physical entities that are out there, good and evil, comes across the screen of your mind, and it's your choice which you entertain. We talk about paying a karmic debt, but what if the personality of the person who is having life experiences over and over again doesn't wish to pay the debt, but instead, lifetime after lifetime becomes more and more and more evil?
You'll find that those spirits that accumulate and these negative karmic debts, there will be a situation that will happen that the equivalent treatment that they have dished out over these lifetimes will hit them, bang, all at once, just like that.
Wow.
And yeah, someone will be, it will be planned. For example, let's say I'm the bad guy here and I just can't get it right. I keep on doing all these bad things. And you go, okay, Sandy, I'm going to incarnate with you in this lifetime. If you don't get it right, I'm going to dish out to you what you've dished out to other people, and you're going to learn this once and for all, because we've given you the opportunity to repay this in a positive manner, and you're not getting it right. We need to move on. We need to put this past so we can progress on other things. I am going to deal this equivalent treatment to you, and you will experience it yourself, and then you will truly understand this. You will be born. You will come to me, whatever the experience or situation is. You will act upon me, and I will be the recipient of the treatment that I have dished out over the lifetimes, and it will be done with.
So that would be a little bit like Hitler being reincarnated as a Jew.
He's got quite a way to go.
I reckon so.
He's got quite a way to go. He's got quite a way to go.
So I guess the question I want to ask is, when we're in our spirit form, we're with our friends, we're with the people that we've built these bonds with over the eternities, and we decide or we choose that we're going to come back to Earth and live another life, or back to some planet and live another life, a mortal life or a life as a bird or a horse or whatever, and you know, they decide they're going to come too, and maybe you go as teams or you decide to go as spouses, and then you find each other later. It seems like there's a lot of planning that goes into planning, into organizing the incarnation. So that being said, if you're involved in that choice process, is there someone on the other side, a spirit guide, a council, the creator, who says, this time you're going to go back as as a pauper in South Africa, and you're going to learn what it's like to be poor all of your life instead of the life of wealth that you lived in New York City the last time you went.
Yeah.
So you don't necessarily get to choose what experience. It comes up off this karmic repayment cycle.
The karmic repayment cycle will be for those events that didn't quite work out.
Right.
And that you couldn't really deliver on a positive note. You see, now, let's move back to the beginning when you say, like, this kind of meeting that takes place prior to your lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
The eternal spirit thrives on achievement. Achievement is learning through experiences. You, believe it or not, you will want to be born into a life of poor poverty in terms of financial, and I don't view financial wealth as nothing.
Right.
Because that doesn't lead to fulfillment at all. Okay, so, but money is okay to have, that's fine, but it's not the be-all and end-all of everything. So, you will agree enthusiastically to become that perhaps poor man in the rice field of India with the monsoons pouring on your head and you're soaking wet year after year after year, because you have chose to experience that for the benefit of your spirit in terms of learning to be more like the Creator. We can't have lifetimes of the rich and famous time after time after time, and also we can't have a life of, let's say, as a healer. For example, let's say someone's a doctor or a spiritual healer and they have lifetime after life and they keep on experiencing that and doing good to others. They need to experience other things in order to grow and truly learn.
Hmm.
So we won't go, no, I can't be born into India or Africa or Argentina in a mud hut. That sucks. You will want to do it. I don't know, Dr. Agnew, it sounds like a little bit less stressful life than living in the first world country 100 miles an hour, eh?
Well, you know, when I think of a really good example, let's think of Jesus Christ, who I'm sure would have had the choice to live any time, anywhere he wanted to, chose to live in a time when people were shepherds and fishermen, in an absolutely perfectly humble existence, probably never traveled more than 60 miles his entire life, and yet look at the effect he had on the universe.
There probably isn't a human being that's walked the earth that hasn't had a biggest impact than Jesus Christ.
But he didn't, even though he came with the legacy of being the only begotten of the Father, he did not come in as a wealthy ruling king or emperor.
That's right. And I think most of them, a lot of influential people that come into our lives, not necessarily what you see in media, or just ordinary folk. Ordinary folk. I personally think that the message of Jesus has become a little bit distorted over time, but I still think his original, my interpretation, my gut feeling of it, is that the man taught love and peace and embracing life with a passion and enjoying life. And he didn't. I think the only time he lost his cool was when he smashed up the temple and all the guys were in there selling on that day or whatever in the Bible.
Yeah, where he cleared the temple grounds of the money.
Yeah.
Actually, he did.
Yeah, it's the only reference. He kind of lost it. But a lot of information has passed throughout the centuries and through the Dark Ages. Not, I don't necessarily take everything word for word in historical documents, but.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's a single person in the world that has a big of impact as Jesus Christ and his message. Now, how human beings take that message, or even take Muhammad's message of Islam, take that and do actions upon that, is up to them. You can't hold Jesus of Nazareth and Muhammad accountable for the actions of those who claim to be acting in their religion, for example, the terrorists acting in the name of Islam. You can't hold Muhammad and Islam accountable for that. You can't, because he's not the one doing it. These other people are. I mean, I could, hypothetically jump on a plane, do the same thing and say in the name of Islam. That's not true. And that's where I think a lot of the world is going to realize that the actions of people are the actions of people.
Well, that being said, religion, as I said earlier, is really independent of one's relationship with God. And religions have always, since the time of Baal or whatever religion you want to talk about, have always been hijacked by those with delusions of grandeur and want to rule the world. And they are today the same way. My guest tonight is Sandy Andrew. He is the author of Your Never-Ending Life. I think it's a great read. It's put out by Bridgeway Books, and hopefully it's the first in a series of books coming out. You can always get more information on it by going to his website, universallivingseries.com.
Universallearningseries.com.
Universallearningseries.com. It's really small print, and I didn't have my glasses on at the moment. Now I do. I'm going to take about 3 minutes and take care of some commercials, and we will come back right at the top of the hour with another musical interlude. You own an inkjet printer, right? Well, I used to buy my inkjet cartridges at a national chain store for about $35 a cartridge. The color and black cartridges together ran around $80.
Erica?
Well, no more.
Etika?
I discovered a great place
Etika?
To buy printer supplies at 123 Inkjets. They not only provide excellent quality and fast shipping, every time I buy, I get a chance to win a free printer. In May, they're giving away 5 printers a day. So stop paying those high prices. Visit 123 Inkjets at X Squared Radio today and start saving money. If you like wildlife art and would love to add some of the most beautiful replicas to your home or office, you should visit Wildlife Gifts at X Squared Radio. They have everything from pandas to fish to eagles to horses in all sizes and price ranges. No matter what animal you love the most, they have the art for you. So visit Wildlife Gifts at X Squared Radio for that special someone today. There is some place you should visit before the end of next week, the Horizon Project. It's probably the most important examination of future events in the world today. But there is a reason you should visit their website soon. I can't give you all the details here, but I can tell you that the first DVD in the 6-part series is now available for pre-purchase at $5 off. This series will no doubt be airing on the History Channel or Discovery Channel, but you need the uncut version with all of the bonus material. Trust me, it may be one of the most important video productions you will ever see. you need to click on the Horizon Project banner at X Squared Radio today. You know, we have revealed to you the ancient predictions that natural disasters are going to increase in power and frequency in these times. We might not always have the National Weather Service or the Emergency Broadcasting Service, so you might want to get your hands on some of the best weather reporting instruments around. Visit Wind and Weather at X Squared Radio and pick up something that might be useful. They also have the neatest gifts for your favorite people who like things for the outdoors or for their meditation garden. Check out Wind and Weather at X Squared Radio. And we also want to let you know that The Arc of Millions of Years, Volume 2, is now climbing the charts. I checked yesterday, and it is destined to be another Amazon bestseller. You can have it either by going to Amazon or Barnes & Noble or any of the online sellers or your local Barnes & Noble store. But if you want an autographed copy, you want to access the audiobooks, we'll send that to you for free if you buy the hardback. You need to go to the website, which is arcofmillionsofyears.com. Make sure you spell that like Noah's Ark, A-R-K. It is destined to be another national bestseller, as was Volume 1. And we will be back with X Squared Radio and my guest, Sandy Andrew, right after this 48-second musical interlude. And welcome back to X Squared Radio, where the past meets the future. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. My guest tonight is Sandy Andrew. He is the author of a wonderful book called Your Never-Ending Life. It's put out by Bridgeway Books. And, of course, you can get it by going to all the online sellers, or you can go to his website at universallearningseries.com. And stay current with the new books that are coming out. I'm sure Sandy is going to be a prolific writer. He's good at it. It's an easy book to read, a great airplane book. If you want to pick up this book and go on a trip, this is a great book to read on an airplane. Well, we're into our final hour, and I'm going to maybe take this in a little different direction, or maybe a higher direction than where we've been. I want to ask the question, just as a personal opinion, because it just comes out a little bit in your book in between the lines, and as we think about multiple incarnations, one of the things that seems to be really exciting people now, when I get out there and interview people, there's a feeling that we are in what is termed the end times. So, do you think that we are in the end times for the Earth?
Would you explain a little bit more end times? Could you clarify that so I've got it right?
Sure. It seems as though there are predictions or prophecies that seem to line up with about this year. I've heard it called 2012. I've heard it talked about as, you know, in the Bible as Gog and Magog, or Armageddon, and other religions have more or less the same kind of apocalyptic language. But, you know, that kind of language has been around for centuries, maybe even millennia. But now it seems like more than ever, people really think we're living near the end times, which means not necessarily that the Earth's going to be completely destroyed, but some major change in lifestyle or environment is about to occur.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Well, I sense that myself. First of all, in Armageddon or massive war, we have the capability to do it with the weapons
sure.
we have. And then secondly, we have the people that are willing to do it. So, and that's what I refer to, if we can just hold it together for the next 150 years, I think we'll cross this shaky bridge that I feel that we're on now. You ask about end times. I think where humanity is on a shaky bridge going over a large river and a fast-moving one at that, that can make or break us. I think the Earth, if there was a massive outbreak of nuclear war, for example, I don't think there will be, but let's say there was, I think life forms will go on, the planet will survive, and nature will repair it as the thousands of years go by. I think humanity is carrying the hopes of all the life forms on Earth with it as we cross this bridge, and it's really in our own hands to make it across or not to.
You know, the area of the world that you and I come from, we grow up with these legends of ancient civilizations that lived just to the west of us, Atlantis or Mu, and even some of the words that we take for granted, like Saxon or Aryan or different race, different names like that. We are maybe in that part of the world a little more in touch with it than most other civilizations are. It appears that there have been other ancient civilizations that have grown to size and zenith and accomplishment just like us, just like here in the 21st century. But they didn't make it. They
No.
ended up either wiping themselves out or being wiped out by some cataclysm.
Yeah.
Do you feel that, you know, that's the scale of finality that we're facing right now as a race?
Yeah, it could be. It could be. There's a very strong possibility that we will either one or two things will happen. One, will almost destroy humanity, or we will bring humanity together with a sense of awareness and a deep respect for the way people live their lives in peace. It's either A or B. It's one way or the other. Because I feel global conflict seems to be escalating. I don't think it's receding. Despite the efforts of the UN, I think we've got some challenges ahead in diplomacy and understanding, but also strength as well is going to be needed by all these world leaders.
Earlier we talked about spirit guides, and we talked about that you know, perhaps these that have very good life experience more or less volunteer to become a spirit guide for someone. Do you think there are people on the earth who have become so wise and complete through their lives that they are able to help other? I guess in other words, are there people who didn't need another mortal life right now but came anyway to help others as guides in physical form?
Yeah. Yeah, and their sole purpose in life is not particularly to learn any lessons themselves, although we all learn as we go along, but it's for there to comfort and guide other people
mm-hmm.
along to the fulfillment of their lessons too. Yes, I do believe that, yeah.
Well, you
and
know,
then when a particular lesson is complete for a human being, then that spirit, that person will move on and away from that person's life. You know, when a chapter of your life closes and you move away from one town to another, you lose contact with a person that was a great assistance to you.
Mm-hmm.
That chapter is now over, and that guide who specifically came into this world to help you, they move on, and you've learned your lesson, and you kind of lose touch with them, and the next thing you know, they've passed away. I believe that happened in my life. Not necessarily passing away, but there was someone who was born ahead of me that was I was destined to meet that was a great spiritual, I wouldn't say influence, but confirmation of what the thoughts I carried within me.
Mm-hmm.
She was just the, not the key that unlocked the door, but just the little push to open the door further. And
you think she was prepared?
It was a great fulfilling experience to be told what you'd always thought and carried around with you your entire life.
So she had the ability to, in mortal life, in mortal form, put you in touch with some of these truths that you now hold so dear.
Yeah, she's a psychic lady. A practicing psychist, rather, not psychic lady. not grammatically correct. Down in Arlington, Texas, and I've just known her. I feel as if I've known her for throughout the ages. When I first laid eyes on her, when I first heard her voice on the telephone, and I believe that her and I were destined. She was destined to help me. I swear it. So to answer your question, yes, I believe there's people that come in physical form into the world to help and guide people along the way.
You know, in every age, it is said that there are a few beings who come to life who have the capability of learning almost everything, of comprehending almost everything, at least on this earth. Maybe Einstein was one of those great geniuses, or Leonardo da Vinci was one of those geniuses, maybe even Newton. But in times past, great minds like that have not always had access to knowledge. They may have been sequestered away or didn't have access to libraries, or even if they could have written or could have invented anything, it wouldn't have proliferated because there was no mechanism. But now, these days, with the ability to literally sell or put out there any idea that you want almost instantly. I mean, if you have something to sell in your garage, you can sell it to someone in Australia simply by photographing it, putting it on eBay, and selling it. We have access to almost unlimited knowledge. Now, when these beings come to be, and they have this great propensity, they have this great potential, they can reach it in a lifetime. And I feel almost exactly the way you do, that there are spirit guides who have come to Earth in physical form. They've chosen to be born. Even though there's no karmic debt to learn, there's nothing serious in this level of development of the Earth that they need to learn, they come anyway, to try to help the world, to try to help society, to try to meet you and try to meet me and tell us that one key thing that we need that helps us make that one great decision in our lives.
Yeah, just one thing, isn't it? Just one.
It seems to be. You know, I was in a class one time and the teacher did the most amazing thing. She said, I want you to close your eyes. I want you to go back to when you were 9 years old. I want you to look at the house that you lived in from the outside. Of course, we all have our eyes closed and we're going back to our childhood homes. And she says, well, I want you to invite yourself into the house. And go take yourself to your bedroom, show yourself your favorite toys, all of this. Have your dinner with yourself. Only you can see yourself. And then at the end of all this, you take yourself to the door and you say goodbye. But just before you close the door, your current self gets to turn back to your 9-year-old self and tell yourself one thing. And then she said, you have to decide right now what that thing is that you would have told your 9-year-old self. Wow, that was a real powerful feeling.
It is, yeah, that's a good one, huh?
And I thought, just what you were saying about spirit guides or great benevolent people that are incarnated in this life with one or two or three specific missions that they have to accomplish, like meeting Sandy Andrew and giving him a key piece of information. What a great sacrifice. What a great love for fellow human beings to go through that and come here and do that.
Yeah.
Almost like like part of your savior or your list of saviors.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, love's the cornerstone of the spiritual being. I mean, that's what the Creator is 100% pure love, and that's what we're trying to become. I believe universal learning and incarnating into life forms is to become more like the Creator. And you ask any person who's embroiled in hate and carrying out various acts, and you ask them, hey, are you really happy? Are you really happy? And they'll struggle to say yes. And you ask the person who's perhaps sacrificing or just living a normal life in peace for the most part and loving their children, their family, and other people too. You ask them if they're happy, and they'll say, yeah, I am.
Well, I've actually heard them say, well, there's no such thing as happiness.
Well, I think fulfillment is to me, fulfillment is happiness. When you're fulfilled, that, for me personally, in this lifetime anyway, it's quite a big task I have to achieve here. But when I do the work of universal learning, I feel very fulfilled.
Well, that is marvelous.
When I have my wife and my newborn daughter safe and happy, that's fulfillment to me.
Yeah, I can see that. I look at fulfillment of rulers like Genghis Khan or Attila the Hun or Alexander the Great, and you say, you know, what is fulfillment? And you read the books, and Alexander the Great weeps because he said there were no more worlds to conquer.
I mean, you say Alexander the Great, I mean, boy, he was a bit of a dictator himself.
Sure.
Not to live in daylight, set up plenty of civilizations and conquered this and conquered that, and they say he's great. Okay, maybe he was a good military strategist, but I don't see what's great about butchering, you know, thousands of people on the name of conquest.
Well, when it comes down to it, I suppose this is the most important question in the universe. You answer it in your book, but maybe you can put a little bit more onto it. You ask the question in your book, what is the meaning of life? And how did you answer that? How would you answer that now?
Is to experience sensations in order to grow to become more like the Creator.
I think that's the most amazing purpose.
Yeah, that's to me is the meaning of life. It's not some fearful experience or prison sentence or confinement that you have to go through. It's we all are going to have our highs and lows, so we all need to accept that. And if you embrace your life and you love it and you try and you keep yourself clean and don't go out and do no harm, you will find you have met your goals of your particular individual lessons of learning in this lifetime, and you will become fulfilled and you will be happy when you're fulfilled. And to be fulfilled, all you need to do is harm no other. Every once in a while, a couple of times a week, just slow your mind down and sit down and just kind of reflect on what you're trying to do in life, what you're trying to achieve, and just sit down and follow your gut, and you'll come right the way back around again to getting them lessons and experiences which will lead to fulfillment, and the fulfillment will lead to happiness.
Isn't it a little bit like all about the learning process, about the building process? I mean, you don't actually finish your life. Your life finishes for you. You just, nobody ever, you know, I don't think, gets to the point where the life is and says, okay, I'm done. I finished everything. My life is complete. I'm ready to die now.
No. No, it's not like that. I think a lifetime as a human being is that we are subject to the laws of nature of this particular world, meaning the average lifespan for a male, what is now 75, somewhere around there. I stand to be correct. Let's say 75, for example. So we just can't expect to die at 32 after our lessons are complete. So we have to see out the preordained lifetime, the length of our lifetime. And I view one of the universal laws, it's not my theory, if I could just pause here for a second, Doctor, The theory I write about universal learning and universal laws, it's not mine. It's all of us, meaning that we're all part of one universe, all of
mm-hmm.
us. And this information is with me, but it's also with everyone else and with the guides. And so I write what is passed on to me and what is in my own mind. So the universal law of learning means that it's never over. You're always learning. It's like I wrote in the book, and you may recall this, the analogy, my analogy is that poster in the office that says, when you have that man running up the hill that says the race for quality has no finish line.
Mm.
Meaning that your universal learning is there's not necessarily an end goal when you're done. Yes, you do reach a point on Earth where most of your experiences have been satisfied and you move on to other parts of learning, but you can easily unlearn a lesson very, very quickly. We can easily give in to our animal passions and commit an act that's not so much positive and unlearn what we have learned over the lifetimes and rectify it in this lifetime or another lifetime to follow. You know,
we all
make mistakes, Doctor, every single one of us. We all have errors of judgment, and we always will do. We always will do.
Well, I guess
how we handle them situations that really counts.
Right. I guess it's kind of like going to the beach and building a sandcastle. You go and you've got some nice wet sand. Maybe you have a shovel or a bucket or some things to help you, and you set about building it. But really, the day's over when the castle's finished, because it's not finishing the sandcastle that's the fun. It's the building of the sandcastle that's fun.
Yeah,
I think.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, it's no different than a lot of the artwork that I do, specialized finishing, is all the action, all the fun is in the application process.
Mm, yeah, exactly.
That's where all the trials and errors are during it, not at the end of it.
Yeah, when it's done, it's time to go on to the next project.
That's right.
I don't want to stay here and maintain this. I'm finished building and I want to go on. Well, how does one plan for having a mortal life begin? I mean, what's involved for each person who comes here?
Well, if you recall in the book, I listed some emotional experiences. I mean, I could have wrote about 800 pages, but we just touched on some basic ones like giving into revenge and hate. Well, they're negative emotions. Well, let's focus on some positive ones for a change. We talked a lot about some negative ones. Let's say you have to learn unconditional love. You've had this experience in your other lifetimes, and you're a bit resentful of perhaps your children or your wife or your grandfather that you had to take care of, and he was sick, and you had to sacrifice this and sacrifice that, and you resented him for them. So you're in your spiritual dimension, and you want to learn these things. That's what the listeners and the readers need to understand, if they can, that you have a deep desire to learn these traits. This is the whole point of your lifetime. So you'll map out in your life and prior to your lifetime with your guides how you're going to go about achieving this. And then you're okay, this is how we're going to do it, this is what's going to happen. And then when you're born, that knowledge is locked away inside your higher mind, and you only get glimpses of it here and there, which is your deja vu experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And if you follow the guidance, and normally you make the right decisions, most of us do, which school we go to, not necessarily who we date, because that's normally a few disasters until we get the hang of it, but what clubs, social clubs we're going to do, what activities, and your life will follow along the path more or less, and then before you know it, you'll be faced with them very situations that you planned prior to your lifetime on Earth.
I see.
And it happens without you even more or less realizing it, if you open up to your mind. If you're embroiled in negative emotions and hate, and we all know some folks who are constantly just down in the dumps and just dragging their heels and not really trying to be positive at all on or perhaps realistic and positive on some issues, and they somewhat struggle, and they're the type of people that sometimes really struggle to get to the events that will
initiate the learning process for them, and then they feel unfulfilled because within themselves they know they've missed out on some of the events that they were supposed to take place, and later on in lifetime the guys will format new events for them. So you will experience those events.
Are we able to choose the time and general place as well that these things are going to happen?
Yeah. Prior to the lifetime, when we're incarnated, that's pretty much the show is on, and here we go. But like we talked about earlier, when my mother told me that her and my father weren't listening, it was solid as a rock, Doctor. I knew it was a shock, but it was no surprise, and I knew, even thinking back on it now and sensing the emotions, that it was almost as if I was standing in the afterworld at that specific split second when she told me. Mm. It almost felt as if I wasn't in that room. The flashback was so strong. So I determined at what age in my life, or I knew what age in my life, more or less, that this event was going to take place.
You think, I mean, are we incredibly aware when that moment happens, or when it's about to happen, or do you think sometimes we're like being passed by a motorist? We just don't look up, and then the moment is gone, and we missed it.
I think I certainly can sense them, and I think that every human being, or every spirit, rather, we're talking about spirits here, because that's what we all are at different stages of development. In terms of their awareness, and some people have a little bit more of a harder time sensing these outer dimensional energy flows and guidance, and some people don't really want to acknowledge it, and that's fine. Everyone has their own free will.
You think maybe it would be a good idea for listeners to sort of prepare themselves through this meditation? Maybe one of the thoughts they could have before they start their day is, look, if there's some predestined thing that I'm supposed to learn with my life, and I kind of have some ideas what that might be, if that opportunity makes itself known to me today, really make me aware that it's about to happen. I really want to open my eyes. I want to stop and pay attention and make sure that I get this right.
Yeah, it will happen for you. It's absolutely amazing. You know, well, somebody once told me about during meditating, just ask, and the guides will give you what you need in your lifetime to be fulfilled. Now, remember, to be fulfilled, we have to experience the lessons of our predetermined lessons of our lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
And even if they're not so pleasant, let's say we won $1 million and we were destined to lose it, so we wouldn't give in to greed and money and all that. Then so be it. As long as you're fulfilled, you will be happy. So first of all, during every meditation, you should always ask to be surrounded by God's love, light, and protection. And believe it or not, that will take care of a lot of the negative energy that flows around.
Wow.
As bizarre as it sounds, it works. Because like I said, you're just like an antenna, and you're attracting all energy in the universe when you start to open up your mind and let that so-called firewall down. And also during the meditation, and just ask for guidance. I mean, it may sound a little bit spooky to some of the listeners, and a little bit weird, and a lot of hocus-pocus rubbish, and I actually wrote that in my book. I quote hocus-pocus rubbish, and running energy and crazy things like that. But it's not. It's not. When you learn to tap into the universal energy and just observe the universal laws, or just acknowledge them, and your life will start to flow in the manner that it was preordained and destined to be. Following your destiny is one of the most fulfilling things I've ever experienced in my life, apart from my marriage and the birth of my child.
I believe that exact same thing. I you know, these epiphanies come in the strangest forms. I was watching a movie one time. It's actually a B-movie called Joe Versus the Volcano. It had Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan in it. And aside from the plot, there was this just an excellent line from Meg Ryan as she was talking about her eccentric father to the character played by Tom Hanks. His name was Joe. She said, my father says that the vast majority of people go through life asleep, but there are a few of us that are awake, and we live in a constant state of amazement.
Oh, yeah.
So,
oh, yeah, absolutely.
That state of amazement is what you're talking about. I sometimes get so excited, I turn to people who look like they're going through life asleep and say something like, did you feel that? Did you see that? Isn't that the neatest thing? It'll just go right by them like a car going by of pastel color. They just don't see it at all.
I think that applies to anything. When I was younger, when I did my apprenticeship in painting and decorating, I absolutely loved it so much. When we used to go out to the pubs on a Friday night in the UK, we used to sit and have arguments about who was the best tradesman between a bricklayer, carpenter, and a painter and decorator. Because you embraced your life so much and you were loving it, you were aware.
Mm-hmm.
And, for example, this is kind of a silly example here, Doctor, but last night I was finally figured out a way to reorganize our family room with all our furniture and our office equipment in such a productive way. I started it at 12, about 10 o'clock after we watched the movie with my wife, and I went to bed about 12:30. I was so excited about this one thing. I got up out of bed at 1:05 in the morning and worked till about 3:40 this morning, rearranging this entire office area.
And
people may think that's, whoa, is that all you've got to do on a Saturday night in the morning? No, it's just being excited about embracing life.
Yep.
Being excited about who you are. I know it's just a small, trivial example, but every little trivial thing you do in life makes a difference.
I believe that very same thing. You know, you talk in your book about setting goals. And, oh, my goodness, we've had all kinds of books and lectures and infomercials. That's my parrot in the background. Pay no attention. And everybody has their own tricks for setting goals. I'll share with you mine, and then you can share with me the wisdom that you've come up with in your book. I like to use my refrigerator door. If I have something that I want to accomplish or a goal that I want to reach, I'll either write it up or I'll take a photograph of it or print it off, and I'll put it behind a magnet on the refrigerator so I can see it every day. And it's the darndest thing. By the end of the year, it seems that I've accomplished almost everything that I've put on that refrigerator, except for lose another 10 pounds. I just haven't mastered that one. But everything else, you know, has come to pass. Even the color and make of my vehicle that I drive, and the job that I have, and, you know, completing books on time, those kinds of goals just give me peace of existence.
Fulfillment.
Yeah.
Fulfillment.
So how can you, in your experience in putting this together, and also from the perspective of multiple lives as an effort to build a soul that's more like the Creator, how do we set goals and accomplish them without being disappointed?
Okay, well, we can talk about goals one in two ways. We can talk about material goals in our lifetime, which material goals may or may not relate to some of our lessons, such as changing your job, which will lead to a certain event that's going to happen 3 years from now, which will be a good lesson for you. Or we can talk about just pure spiritual goals.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, I think material goals, very similar to what you did, writing them down, placing them on a fridge, or placing them in front of your computer, or put them in your computer on your task and your Outlook if you have Microsoft Outlook, or some other form where you can legibly see it, is a very good way. I think you have to first identify the goal, what you're trying to achieve. I mean, that's the number one thing in any business environment, and the same thing applies to any spiritual. What are you trying to achieve? Are you trying to be more calmer person, or more relaxed, or more loving, less spiteful, less sarcastic, less hateful? There's plenty of things you can try to achieve. So if you write them down and then say, okay, that's what I'm trying to achieve. Step number two, how am I going to do it? How am I going to do that? We can't just say, well, I'm going to be a millionaire in 5 years, or I'm going to be a less spiteful person, or I'm going to be a more loving person. I'm just going to do it. I'm just going to make it happen. That's that's just talk. We need to figure out, okay, how are we going to do that? And I'll write down steps 2, 3, and 4. And then I'll put that in writing. And then, because having the goal, the objective first, and then the steps involved, A, B, C, and D, for example, may just be A and B or just A, how I'm going to achieve that. And like you say, in 6 months' time, before you know it, you've achieved the goals. Right by my computer on the left-hand side, I have a home and projects list, which I keep up to date. That's projects around the house.
Oh, I thought your wife kept that up to date. Mind that.
Well, at 3:30 this morning, she wasn't. And then I have one goals for the author business. And then I have a personal goals list, which is a lot of the business studies, degrees I'm doing, and stuff like that. And that's right by my PC, and I look at them every day, and slowly but surely they get ticked off. Some a little bit later than others, but for the most part, they do get completed on time. But you truly have to want to achieve a goal. Let's say, for example, you really want to lose weight. It requires discipline and a true desire within yourself to achieve that.
Yeah, I just don't desire it more than French fries.
Yeah. A lot of people are a little bit overweight and they're happy with it. If they're happy with it, so be it. So be it.
Well, that's true.
I mean, today's I think the human body is still designed to run and hunt, and here we are laying on couches and sitting on chairs all the time, and half the time we don't move. I mean, I really try and exercise 3 or 4 times a week, and it's hard not to put on weight with all the foods that we eat and the lifestyle changes, and our bodies are still the same bodies that were around 600-700 years ago, maybe slightly taller, but our systems and everything still very much the same.
Mm-hmm. In your book, you talk a lot about love. We've talked about it a little bit tonight. And you say it's an emotion, but you also say that it has much stronger implications. One of the things, it kind of goes along with the question, do you believe we're in the end times? A question that I often ask guests. But the other end of that is, how can mankind as a race learn to love? I think even every individual, I think, experiences love, or hopefully they experience love in their lifetimes. But as a race on this planet, if we could master it, or if we could make it the focal point of our interaction with one another, conflict and war, as we know it, would go away. We would possibly not even have to have nations anymore. We could just be Earthlings, for that matter.
That's right. I mean, what's wrong with somebody says to you, "Where are you from?" "Well, I'm from Earth." Could you imagine the actual look on their face? "What? What did you say? Yeah, I'm from Earth. Where are you from?"
It's
kind of a weird, quite a weird answer, but it's the truth. We're all from here.
If my wife was here right now, she'd be laughing, because I do that all the time.
Really? Yeah, well, we are from Earth, aren't we? I mean, if the Earth was attacked from by an alien race, we would all soon forget our problems, and we would soon unite. But we don't want that to happen just for the sake of uniting. I think that the change of awareness, and that leads me back to what we were talking about, humanity crossing this very deep, fast-moving river on this shaky bridge. If human beings are entitled to the knowledge that's available now to all of us, the internet libraries, and that a lot of the fear of each other will go away, because we fear the unknown,
mm-hmm.
and the unknown drives our fear. And when you fear something, you don't understand it. When you don't understand it, you want to destroy it. And while we've got this lack of knowledge by these, particularly these governments out in the Far East and the Middle East, denying the people of the world just basic access to knowledge, a knowledge base is, to me, is a major, major humanitarian crime. I mean, China, for example, is the world's worst at this. I know they're kind of opening their doors slowly, and hopefully the trigger will lead to a fast-moving flood and then a torrent. But I think the answer to obtaining love for all is for human beings to gain knowledge and awareness, and through awareness will breed understanding, and through understanding will breed enlightenment. And when we have enlightenment and a respect for each other in our ways, then I believe it'll all calm down.
Well, there are a lot of us that believe the camel's nose is in the tent over there. It's not going to be long before the knowledge that is available in the world will make its way into even the most iron curtain type countries. And once people get knowledge, like you say, they will take action with that knowledge. And
yeah, there's no stopping them. Yeah.
Yeah, there will be no stopping them. It's getting back to the what happens if they gave a war and nobody came kind of state, which I think would be wonderful myself.
Yeah.
For the next, I guess the great question people have after they talk about what's the purpose of life, you talked about the unknown. One of the things that we don't know very much about, we think we do because it happens all the time, even before our eyes, and that's death. Now, what is death? Is it a natural ending?
Yeah, I believe it is. I believe it's very natural. When your physical body ceases, you're instantaneously transferred back to your spiritual dimension and back to your home. And when you do that, we touched on this earlier, the moment your spirit leaves your body, your energy force leaves your body, you'll have access again to all the universal knowledge that you had in your lifetime, but it was locked away in your higher mind where you could only get snippets from just to reassure you of your purpose of your lifetime. And there is nothing to fear in death. I think we all have a fear of how we die. I mean, who wants to experience a painful death? I mean, there's no fulfillment in that. And sometimes our death can be a little bit painful for us, but there's nothing to fear from the actual after the passing.
Yeah, I don't think that the pain, even if you die as a victim of some kind, I don't think the pain transcends the physical. It's said that even those that were cast into flames, you know, death was sweet to them, but of course, I have known a few people, including my mother, that died and came back and said that not only did they not experience pain, but they experienced incredible bliss. Even though they weren't gone that long, they didn't go back to, you know, a group of people that they knew and then have to be brought back to life. They didn't make it down the hallway.
They
all talk about this bright hallway that they went down. But death itself was not painful. But we still fear it, don't we?
Yeah, I think it's, well, I do. I fear more the how, you know, any painful aspect of it, falling off a motorcycle, for example. I don't really, to be honest with you, Doctor, I don't really dwell on it too much. I'm just so involved in my life right now that I'm not really too concerned about it, but I think if I did have a slight fear, it would be of how to. And I think talking to other people, they really, really, I've sensed a lot of people have a big fear of how it's going to happen for them.
Hmm. But in your thoughts and studies and things that you've received impressions of, there's no pain of separation from the physical world.
No. When the spirit leaves the body, no. No.
I think the only thing I would regret would be not being able to see, you know, my kids become successful or have their families or meet their grandchildren. You know, that would be the sense of loss that I would have, is that my life experience, the things that, this program right here, the experience of meeting you on the radio and having a nice long conversation in front of millions of people, I wouldn't get to share that with anybody. That would be my sense of loss.
I want to tell you a story when
sure.
you talk about sense of loss. And I want to relate this to a prior lifetime. Now, if we've got time to tell you this, when I was growing up in this lifetime, I always had a strong interest in reference to World War II, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I would always find myself reviewing the battles that took place on the Eastern Front between Germany and Russia. And I would look at the helmet of the German infantry soldier, and I would just find myself staring at it. And even up until about the age of 25, 26, and all I would sense was this enormous sense of loss. And I had a feeling that I perhaps served unwillingly, but we had to do it in the German army during World War II, and I didn't make it through. And it was a really, really traumatic time. And it wasn't the sense of loss from my own lifetime I was feeling, or the sense of loss of the devastation of the country at the hands of a maniac. It was the sense of loss of my children. That's what I was feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And when I went to that lady that I referred to as guide who incarnated me in my lifetime, she confirmed that, and I asked her, is the sense of loss from children? She says, yes, and they're still alive today. And that was hard to take. It was a relief that I confirmed that the thoughts I was having in my entire life. But it was also very sad for a few minutes, and then it came to pass. It was kind of relief that what I thought was true, but when you refer to, when you pass on, you move on, and even now, even talking about it, you just sense this enormous sense of loss.
Have you ever, I know this is a little off subject, but have you ever had the thought that you might go to Germany and try to find the children that you...
Yeah, I've had the thought. I've been there when I was 14. No, when I was 13 with the school, my primary school from Scotland, and it felt great when I was there. And when I was at that age, Dr. Agnew, I was doing a lot of studying, and I've always been interested in the war, especially in that Eastern Front battle that took place. When I became 16, 17, then my thoughts were dwelling on children all the time when I would think on the war. But when I was in Germany, in 1983. It was good. I often thought about perhaps going back, but what you have to realize is that lifetime is over, and
yeah.
it's that physical person has died, and the spirit has moved on. And what I had to learn is it bothered me for years, the war, and I would watch no end of documentaries And now I'm at peace with that lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
I'm at peace with it now. And it, that lesson is now was almost unfinished, because I felt that when I departed the physical life form, I think it was 1943. I just get this feeling 43. I was really, really shaken to the core, and I really still never came to terms with the traumatic events that transpired during that lifetime. Do you ever seen that movie Saving Private Ryan?
Oh yeah.
You see the opening scene on the beach.
The first 40 minutes. Yeah.
When the body parts are flying everywhere.
Yeah.
That's what it was like. Every day. Every day it was like that, and it was horrific. And one of the lessons I feel, and slightly, I wouldn't say perhaps lessons unfinished, is just to let go of that trauma and say goodbye to that lifetime. And I don't really watch much World War II anymore. I sometimes play some online games and things with my brother-in-law, but
well, I know when
thank
I went
goodness
back
that's,
to
that's laid to rest.
When I went back to Scotland last year and I went to Stranraer, and I stayed in a bed and breakfast on Agnew Crescent, overlooking Agnew Park, which overlooked Agnew Bay, and I went up to the castle, and there, you know, embedded in the stone walls of the castle where there was the family crest, and even castings of the nobles' hands that they casted, you know, back in 1380 and put up there on the castle wall, and I felt this flood of just hundreds and hundreds of Agnews that had lived in and around that castle over the centuries. And
wow.
It was like I stepped out of the car. It was an amazing story anyway, because we almost couldn't find the castle. And this, finally this woman said, look, it's right to those trees, but it's private. And I said, well, my name is Brooks Agnew. And she said, well, then I guess you're entitled. You can go through there. So I drove through. Which I drove through, and there's a picture of it on my website at arcofmillionsofyears.com. And I went through, and that castle just hit me like, I don't know, and like every spirit that lived there came rushing through me to introduce themselves to me. I felt I could hear their voices and little kids playing, and I could smell roasted pig roasting as I walked through the old kitchen. It was just an amazing, amazing feeling. Now, I don't know if I had a past life experience or not, but I do remember riding a horse and carrying a sword, and I don't know. I can't. That's the only thing I can remember of it. I never really have tried to regress and go back to it, but I've just kind of felt like I was communicating with an ancestor. But I also felt from the time that I was very young, 7 or 8 years old, that I lived a long, long time before I got here.
I think you have to.
Well, I'm glad it comes out, but I've had rather poignant thoughts about it. I just have never written about it or explored it. But now you've inspired me after reading your book and hearing your stories and feeling of your will. I think I will do some exploring there.
I'll tell you another thing, another quick story. When I was also young, I used to draw pictures of the Titanic sinking.
Wow.
Yeah, and I was always interested in the Titanic as well. And that same lady, when I went down to her and we were talking about the lifetime in Germany, she says, well, the night on the Titanic, and then my hair stood up on, like, I swear my hair went 6 inches high in the air. And she said, that was an awful night. And I thought, yeah, here's another one that I've been dwelling on for a long, long time, and really had a strong feeling that I didn't make it through that one too. And she kind of cracked a bit of a joke. She says, well, you don't really stay away too long, do you? You kind of go and you come back. And I thought, well, I guess I can't argue with that, because here I am again. And she laughs. So you can always see the funny side of things.
Well, I was going to ask you that question. How much planning do you think it takes to arrange being born again on the earth?
Well, there's no time in the spiritual dimensions. No, nothing at all. But, I mean, with saying that, if you were trying to equate it in Earth times, I wouldn't even say one day. I don't believe it takes that long at all. I think it's really hard to imagine the spiritual, to relate, I've got to say this. Working ways of the spiritual dimensions are not the same as the living dimensions at all. It's not A, B, C, D, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock. It's just totally, totally different. It's like some people have said, as you mentioned, it's just pure peace and bliss and calmness.
But there are these emotional flares that go off inside of us when we're exposed to some deja vu event like your Titanic or your Eastern Front experience, and or my walking out of the car toward the castle experience. There's this like a soul flare that goes off that lets us know this is really important, to where you have been here before, or you've been through this before. This is where you learned a lesson of some kind that helped you become who you are. And I'll share this with you in our final 7 minutes. One of the strangest ones I ever had, I was interviewing a group of people about whether they believed in UFOs or not, and they kept asking me questions, and I said, look, I'm asking the questions. I'm actually trying to collect information for a survey. I need to know so that I can make my way through this book. And one of the people said, are you an alien? And one of those flares went off in my head, like, gosh, what do you mean? I'm not that much different than humans, and I am human, I'm sure. Every cell in my body's human, but I swear I have an alien experience somewhere in a past life.
Yeah.
I have seen Earth. I've seen our solar system from way, way, way out there before.
Yeah, well, there you go. That's the incarnating into another life form. I mean, Dr. Agnew, I mean, you've said how many billions of stars are out there in this non-living dimension. I mean,
there's a lot of planets around each one of those stars.
Carl Sagan did a little math equation the other night. It was on. I wasn't really paying attention. I was studying, but I looked over, and he even took the lowest percentages possible, and he came out with something like, 2 million planets for the same at the same level of civilization as Earth. And I just thought, well, there you go. It was absolutely astonishing. Nymph flares, they go off. They do.
Well,
and
I,
where that comes from is your higher mind.
I feel
it
like...
It comes right through universal energy.
I feel wonderful. I feel like I've met another friend, and I hope you feel the same way.
Yeah, because you've just been open and truthful. And when we're open and truthful, we really are. We're really being who we are, and we're not hiding anything.
Mm-hmm.
I guess we couldn't be very good at being a politician then, huh?
I reckon not.
No.
No, it's easier to sit out here and comment about them than it is to be one. So are there multiple universes, or is there just one big universe that collapses and expands?
When you say universe, I would interpret that as this living dimension, which, like the Milky Way galaxy and all the other billions of galaxies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I believe there's other living dimensions, too.
Wow. So the possibilities are measurable,
endless.
But for all intents and purposes, endless.
Endless. It's
so
transcendent in scale.
We will continue to grow, and we will continue to learn and expand and achieve this purpose of life, which is to become more like the Creator. And I guess my final question is, and maybe we can talk about this for 2 or 3 minutes, how much... like the Creator, can we become?
I wrote in my book, the feeling I got was that we will never become like God or become a God. The purpose, I feel, of universal learning is to become more like your Creator, is to learn to be as loving and as understanding and as knowledgeable as it, he, or she is. But you will not be equal or as 100% as the superior spirit, I feel more comfortable calling. I use the term God or Creator because it's a lot more familiar for people.
Mm-hmm.
I really believe in universal learning encompasses all. The universal laws seems to apply to all of us, regardless of what faith or whatever we do. And it's just a pattern. If you examine the humanity and life forms in general, everything we do, we all experience the sensations, and we all learn from them or unlearn from them. And we all have experiences of deja vu and emotions, and medical science has yet to provide a cure for hate or for jealousy. So these all come from somewhere else, and that somewhere else is the spiritual dimensions. And
so we can continue to progress ever closer, but never quite.
No, never quite the same. But the spirit, the universal spirit, thrives on learning. If you ask anybody, or even yourself, how does it feel when you, this is earthly knowledge, this living dimension, just human knowledge, when you pass an exam, isn't it a great, wonderful feeling?
Sure it is.
And that's learning. And we really, a lot of us enjoy the challenges and the fulfillment that brings. And, you know, I had a case not too long ago here in my work environment where I learned how to control my emotion with one specific person, and it brought good, peaceful, when I say peaceful, mostly peaceful for the most part, working environment. And I had a strong inner feeling 2 weeks ago that I did that as an action, and that was an effect of my decision to change my emotional behavior towards that person. And I felt fulfilled and felt I had learned a little lesson there. And that makes me happy when you're fulfilled.
Well, I for one appreciate that you have written this great book, Your Never-Ending Life. It's out by Bridgeway Books, available everywhere. My guest, Sandy Andrew, has been our wonderful teacher tonight, and his website is universallearningseries.com. Pick up the book. I highly recommend it. You can get it anywhere online, or you can pick it up at our website. We'll have it on the online store for the rest of the year. And as always, you can access our archives and re-listen to this interview as often as you like. Is there any parting comments that you have in our final 60 seconds as we complete our broadcast?
Well, Dr. Agnew, I would just say to any of the viewers is to try and have a deeper understanding of this living dimension that we all refer to as the universe, the number of stars and planetary bodies, all the different religions and spiritual philosophies of the world, of planet Earth, and have a respect for them and a respect for each other and have a respect for yourself. And just remember, you only get in what you put out in life.
Well said.
It's all up to yourself. You can either make a good, satisfying, fulfilling life, or you may not have one. The choice is yours.
Very good. Remember, Earth Explorers, who you are. Everything we do will eventually affect the universe. So try to do it on purpose, every day. Every life is immensely valuable, so reach out for the good in people and help it to grow a little every day. And before long, you will have saved the planet. This is X Squared Radio saying, peace, Earth Explorers. Good night.
Listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.